This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents The Mortal Instruments, Book 6, City of Heavenly Fire, by Cassandra Clare. Read by Sophie Turner and Jason Doring.
Into the Silent Land. The Indarkened woman had pale skin and long coppery hair. It might have been pretty once, but now was tangled with dirt and twigs. She didn't appear to care, just placed the plates of food, gruel, soupy, and gray-looking, for Magnus and Luke, and a bottle of blood for Raphael, on the floor, and turned away from the prisoners. Neither Luke nor Magnus moved toward their food. Magnus felt too sick to have much of an appetite. Besides, he was vaguely suspicious that Sebastian had poisoned the gruel, or drugged it, or both. Raphael, though, seized up the bottle and drank from it hungrily, swallowing until blood ran out of the corners of his mouth.
Now, Raphael, said a voice from the shadows, and Sebastian Morgenstern appeared in the open doorway.
The Indarkened woman bowed her head and hurried out past him, shutting the door behind her. He really looked astonishingly like his father had at his age, Magnus thought. Those odd black eyes, entirely black, without a hint of brown or hazel, the sort of feature that was beautiful because it was unusual. The same fanatic twitch to his smile. Jace had never had that. He had recklessness, and the anarchic joy of imagined self-annihilation, but he was not a zealot, which, Magnus thought, was precisely why Valentine had sent him away. To crush your opposition, you need a hammer, and Jace was a much more delicate weapon than that.
Where's Jocelyn?
It was Luke, of course, his voice a low growl, his hands and fists at his sides. Magnus wondered what it was like for Luke to look at Sebastian, whether the resemblance to Valentine, who had once been his parabatai, was painful, or whether that loss had faded long ago. Where is she? Sebastian laughed, and that was something that was different about him. Valentine had never been a man who laughed easily. Jace's sarcastic humor seemed to have been born into his blood, a distinctly Herondale trait.
She's fine, he said. Just fine. By which I mean she's still alive. Which is the best you can hope for, really.
I want to see her, Luke said.
Sebastian said, as if considering it.
No, I don't see the advantage in it to me.
She's your mother, said Luke. You could be kind to her.
It's none of your business, dog.
For the first time, there was a shadow of youth in Sebastian's voice, an edge of petulance.
You, with your hands all over my mother, making Clary believe you're her family.
I'm more her family than you are, said Luke.
And Magnus shot him a warning look as Sebastian whitened, his fingers twitching toward his belt, where the hilt of the Morgenstern sword was visible.
Don't, Magnus said in a low voice, and then louder. You know if you touch Luke, Clary will hate you. Jocelyn, too.
Sebastian drew his hand away from his sword with a visible effort.
I said I never intended to harm her.
No. Just hold her hostage, Magnus said. You want something. Something from the Clave or something from Clary and Jace.
I'd guess the latter.
The Clave has never interested you much. But you do care what your sister thinks. She and I are very close, by the way, he added.
You're not that close.
Sebastian's tone was withering.
I'm hardly going to spare the life of everyone she's ever met. I'm not that crazy.
You seem very crazy, said Raphael, who had been silent up until that point.
Raphael, Magnus said in a warning tone.
But Sebastian didn't seem angry. He was regarding Raphael with a considering look.
Raphael Santiago, he said. Leader of the New York clan. Or aren't you?
No. It was Camille who held that position, and now the little mad girl. That must be quite frustrating for you. It really seems to me that the Shadow Hunters of Manhattan ought to have stepped in before now. Neither Camille nor poor Maureen Brown were fit to be leaders. They broke the accords. They cared nothing for the law. But you do. It seems to me that of all the downworld races, the vampires have been most ill-treated by Shadow Hunters. One only needs to look at your situation.
Raphael, Magnus said again, and tried to lean forward to catch the vampire's eye, but Magnus's chains pulled tight, rattling. He winced at the pain in his wrists.
Raphael was sitting back on his heels, his cheeks flushed from his recent feeding. His hair was tousled. He looked as young as he had when Magnus had first met him.
I do not see why you are telling me this, he said.
You can't say I've mistreated you more than your vampire leaders, said Sebastian.
I fed you. I haven't put you in a cage. You know I'll win.
You all know it.
And on that day, I'll be happy to make sure you, Raphael, rule all the vampires in New York. In fact, all the vampires in North America. You're welcome to them. All I need is for you to bring the other knight's children to my side. The fair folk have already joined with me. The court always picks the winning side. Shouldn't you?
Raphael rose to his feet. There was blood on his hands. He frowned down at them. Raphael was nothing if not fastidious.
That seems reasonable, he said. I shall join you.
Luke dropped his face in his hands. Through his teeth, Magnus said, Raphael, you have truly lived down to my lowest expectations of you.
Magnus, it doesn't matter, said Luke.
He was being protective, Magnus knew. Raphael had already gone to stand by Sebastian's side.
Let him go. He's no loss.
Raphael snorted. No loss, you say, he said. I am well quit of you idiots flopping about this cell, whining about your friends and lovers. You are weak, and have always been weak.
I should have let you walk into the daylight, Magnus said, and his voice was ice.
Raphael flinched. It was barely a movement, but Magnus saw it. Not that it brought him much satisfaction. Sebastian saw the flinch, though, and the look in his dark eyes intensified. From his belt he produced a knife, thin, with a narrow blade. A misericord. A mercy killer. The kind of blade that was meant to pierce through the gaps in armor and deliver a killing stroke. Raphael, seeing the flash of metal, stepped back quickly, but Sebastian only smiled and flipped the blade in his hand. He offered it to Raphael, hilt first.
Take it, he said.
Raphael reached out a hand, his eyes suspicious. He took the knife and held it, dangling loosely. Vampires had little use for weapons. They were their own weapons.
Very good, said Sebastian. Now let us seal our agreement in blood. Kill the warlock.
The blade dropped from Raphael's hand and clattered to the ground. With a look of irritation, Sebastian bent and snatched it up, putting it back into the vampire's hand. We do not kill with knives, Raphael said, staring from the blade to Sebastian's cold expression.
You do now, said Sebastian. I won't have you tearing out his throat. Too messy. Too easy to get it wrong. Do as I tell you. Go to the warlock and stab him to death. Cut his throat, pierce his heart, however you like.
Raphael turned toward Magnus. Luke started forward. Magnus held up a warning hand.
Luke, he said, don't.
Raphael, if you do this, there will be no peace between the pack and the knight's children. Not now, or ever again, Luke said, his eyes gleaming with a green shine. Sebastian laughed.
You can't imagine you'll ever hold sway over a pack again, can you, Lucian Greymark? When I win this war, and I will rule with my sister beside me, and keep you in a cage for her to throw bones to when it amuses her.
Raphael took another step toward Magnus. His eyes were enormous. His throat had been kissed so many times by the crucifix he wore that the scar never left. The blade gleamed in his hand. "If you think Clary would tolerate," Luke began, and then turned away. He moved toward Raphael, but Sebastian was already in front of him, blocking his way with the Morgenstern blade. With a strange detachment, Magnus watched Raphael approach him. Magnus's heart was thudding in his chest. He was aware of that much, but he did not feel afraid. He had been close to death many times. So many that the idea no longer frightened him. Sometimes he thought some part of him longed for it, for that unknown country, the one place he had never been, that one experience as yet unlived. The tip of the knife touched his neck. Raphael's hand was shaking. Magnus felt the sting as the blade nicked the hollow of his throat. "That's right," said Sebastian with a feral grin. "Cut his throat. Let the blood run out over the floor. He has lived too many years." Magnus thought of Alec then, of his blue eyes and steady smile. He thought of walking away from Alec in the tunnels under New York. He thought of why he'd done it. Yes, Alec's willingness to see Camille had angered him, but it was more than that. He remembered Tessa weeping in his arms in Paris, and thinking that he had never known the loss she felt, because he had never loved like she had, and that he was afraid that someday he would, and like Tessa, he would lose his mortal love, and that it was better to be the one who died than the one who lived on. He had dismissed that later as a morbid fantasy, and had not remembered it again until Alec. It had torn at him to walk away from Alec. But for an immortal to love a mortal, that had been the destruction of gods, and if gods had been destroyed by it, Magnus could hardly hope for better. He looked up at Raphael through his eyelashes. "You remember," he said in a low voice, so low he doubted Sebastian could hear him. "You know what you owe me." "You saved my life," Raphael said, but his voice was numb. "A life I never wanted." "Show me your serious Santiago," said Sebastian. "Kill the warlock." Raphael's hand tightened on the hilt of the knife. His knuckles were white. He spoke to Magnus. "I had no soul," he said, "but I made you a promise on my mother's doorstep, and she was sacred to me." "Santiago," Sebastian began. "I was a child then. I am not now." The knife fell to the floor. Raphael turned and looked at Sebastian, his wide dark eyes very clear. "I cannot," he said. "I will not. I owe him a debt from many years ago." Sebastian was very still. "You disappoint me, Raphael," he said, and sheathed the Morgenstern sword. He stepped forward and picked up the knife at Raphael's feet, turning it over in his hand. A bit of light sparked along the blade, a singeing teardrop of fire. "You disappoint me very much," he said. And then, too swiftly for the eye to follow, he drove the blade into Raphael's heart.
It was freezing inside the hospital morgue. Maya wasn't shivering, but she could feel it, like the points of needles against her skin. Katerina was standing against the bank of steel compartments that held corpses, which ran along one wall. The yellowish fluorescent lights made her look washed out, a pale blue blur in green scrubs. She was muttering under her breath in a strange language that made chills run up Maya's spine. "Where is it?" Bat asked. He was holding a wicked-looking hunting knife in one hand and a large kennel-sized cage in the other. He dropped the cage with a clang, his gaze sweeping the room. Two bare steel tables stood in the center of the morgue. As Maya stared, one of them began inching forward. Its wheels dragged along the tile floor. Katerina pointed. "There," she said. Her gaze was on the cage. She made a gesture with her fingers, and the cage seemed to vibrate and spark. "Under the table." "You don't say," Lily drooled, clicking forward in her heels. She bent down to peer under the table, then leaped back with a shriek. She sailed through the air and landed on one of the countertops, where she perched like a bat, her black hair tumbling down out of its ponytail. "It's hideous," she said. It's a demon, said Katerina. The table had stopped moving. Probably a Dantalion or some other ghoul type. They feed on the dead. Oh, for goodness sake, said Maya, taking a step forward. Before she reached the table, Bat kicked it with a booted foot. It went over with a clang, revealing the creature underneath. Lily had been right. It was hideous. It was about the size of a large dog, but it resembled a ball of grayish, pulsing intestines, studded with malformed kidneys and nodes of pus and blood. A single yellow, weeping eye glared out from among the jumble of organs. Ew, said Bat. I told you, said Lily, just as a long rope of intestines shot out from the demon and wrapped around Bat's ankle, jerking hard. He fell to the floor with a wince-inducing crash. Bat, Maya cried, but before she needed to move, he whipped around and slashed with his knife through the pulsing matter that held him. He scrambled back as demon ichor sprayed across the floor. So gross, Lily said. She was seated on the counter now, holding up an oblong metal object, her phone, as if it would ward the demon off. Bat scrambled to his feet as the demon skittered towards Maya. She kicked out at it, and it rolled back with an angry squishing noise. Bat looked down at his knife. The metal was melting, dissolved by the ichor. He dropped it with a noise of disgust. Weapons, he said, casting around. I need a weapon. Maya seized a scalpel off a nearby table and flung it. It stuck into the creature with a slimy noise. The demon squealed. A moment later, the scalpel shot back out of it as if it had been ejected from a particularly powerful toaster. It skidded along the floor, melting and sizzling. Ordinary weapons don't work on them. Katerina stepped forward, raising her right hand. It was surrounded by blue flame. Only ruined blades. Then let's get some of those, Bat gasped, backing away as the pulsing creature scooted toward him. Only shadow hunters can use them, Katerina cried, and a bolt of blue fire shot from her hand. It struck the creature squarely, sending it rolling over and over. Bat seized hold of the cage and banged it down in front of the demon, yanking up the hatch just as the demon rolled inside. Maya slammed the hatch down and threw the bolt, locking the demon inside. They all backed away, staring in horror as it hissed and threw itself around the confines of its warlock-strengthened prison. All except Lily, who was still pointing her phone at it. Are you filming this? Maya demanded. Maybe, Lily said. Katerina drew her sleeve across her brow. Thanks for the help, she said. Even warlock magic can't kill Dantalians, they're tough. Why are you filming this? Maya said to Lily. The vampire girl shrugged. When the cat is away, the mice will play. Always good to remind the mice that in this case, when the cat is away, the mice will all be eaten by demons. I'm going to send this video file to every one of our downworld contacts around the world. Just a reminder that there are demons we need shadow hunters to destroy. That's why they exist.
They won't exist for long,
hissed the Dantalian demon. Bat yelled and jumped back another foot. Maya didn't blame him. The thing's mouth had opened. It looked like a slick black tunnel lined with teeth.
Tomorrow night is the attack. Tomorrow night is the war.
What war? Katerina demanded. Tell us, creature, or when I get home, I will set to torturing you in every way I can devise.
Sebastian Morgenstern,
said the demon.
Tomorrow night, he attacks Elegante. Tomorrow night, the Shadow Hunters cease to be.
A fire burned in the middle of the cave, the smoke furling up toward the high dome ceiling, lost in shadow. Simon could feel the heat from the fire, a tense crackling against his skin, more than the real sensation of warmth. He guessed it was cold in the cave, from the fact that Alec had bundled himself up in a bulky sweater and carefully wrapped a blanket around Isabel, who was sleeping stretched out on the floor, her head on her brother's lap. But Simon couldn't feel it, not really. Clary and Jace had gone to check the tunnels to make sure they were still free of demons and other possible stray nasties. Alec hadn't wanted to leave Isabel, and Simon had been too weak and dizzy to contemplate moving much. Not that he had let that fact be known. Technically, he was on watch, listening for anything that might come at them from the shadows. Alec was staring into the flames, The yellow light made him look tired, older. "Thanks," he said suddenly. Simon almost jumped. Alec hadn't said a word to him since. "What are you doing?" "For what?"
"Saving my sister," said Alec.
He brushed a hand through Isabel's dark hair.
"I know,"
he said a little haltingly.
"I mean, I knew, when we came here, that this could be a suicide mission. I know it's dangerous. I know I can't really expect us all to survive. But I thought it would be me, not Izzy."
"Why?" Simon said. His head was pounding, his mouth dry.
"Because I'd rather it was me," Alec said. "She's... Isabel. She's smart and tough, and a good fighter. Better than me. She deserves to be all right, to be happy."
He looked at Simon through the fire.
"You have a sister, don't you?"
Simon was jolted by the question. New York seemed a world, a lifetime away.
"Rebecca," he said. "That's her name. And what would you do to someone who made her unhappy?"
Simon eyed Alec warily. "I would reason with them," he said. "Talk it out. Maybe an understanding hug." Alec snorted and seemed about to reply. Then his head snapped around as if he'd heard something. Simon raised an eyebrow. It wasn't often a human heard something before a vampire did. A moment later, he recognized the sound himself and understood. It was Jace's voice. Illumination danced at the end of the far tunnel, and Clary and Jace appeared, Clary holding a witchlight in her hand. Even in her boots, Clary barely came to Jace's shoulder. They weren't touching, but they moved together toward the fire. Simon thought that while they had seemed like a couple ever since the first time they'd come back from Idris, they'd seemed something more now. They seemed like a team.
"Anything interesting?" Alec asked as Jace came to sit beside the fire.
"Clary put glamour runes on the cave entrances. No one should be able to see that there's any way in here."
"How long will they last?"
"Overnight, probably into tomorrow," said Clary, glancing at Izzy. "What with the runes wearing off quicker here, I'll have to check them later. And I've got a better idea of where we're positioned in terms of Alicante. I'm pretty sure that rock wasteland where we were last night," Jace pointed at the rightmost tunnel, "looks out over what I think used to be Broslin Forest." Alec half closed his eyes.
"That's depressing. The forest was beautiful."
"Not anymore." Jace shook his head. "Just wasteland, as far as you can see." He bent and touched Isabel's hair, and Simon felt a small pointless flare of jealousy. That he could touch her so carelessly, show his affection without thinking.
"How is she?"
"Good.
Sleeping.
Things should be well enough to move by tomorrow." Jace's voice was anxious. "We can't stay here. We've sent up enough warnings that we're present. If we don't get to Sebastian, he'll find us first. And we're running out of food."
Simon lost Alec's murmured response. A sudden stabbing pain shot through him, and he doubled up. He felt robbed of his breath, except he didn't breathe. Nevertheless, his chest hurt, as if something had been ripped out of it.
"Simon! Simon!" Clary said sharply, her hand on his shoulder, and he looked up at her, his eyes streaming tears tinged with blood.
"God, Simon, what's wrong?"
she asked, frantic.
He sat up slowly. The pain was already starting to ebb.
"I don't know. It was like someone stuck a knife into my chest."
Jace was swiftly on his knees in front of him, his fingers under Simon's chin. His pale gold gaze searched Simon's face.
"Raphael," Jace said finally in a flat voice. "He's your sire, the one whose blood made you a vampire."
Simon nodded.
"So?"
Jace shook his head.
"Nothing," he muttered.
"When did you last feed?"
"I'm fine," Simon said, but Clary had already caught at his right hand and lifted it. The gold fairy ring shone on his finger.
The hand itself was dead white, the veins under the skin showing black, like a network of cracks in marble.
"You're not fine, haven't you fed? You lost all that blood. Clary, where are the bottles you brought?"
She cast around looking for his bag, and found it shoved against the wall. She yanked it toward her.
"Simon, if you don't start taking better care of yourself..."
"Don't!" He grabbed the strap of the bag away from her. She glared at him.
They broke, he said. The bottles broke. When we were fighting the demons in the Accords Hall. The blood's gone.
Clary stood up.
Simon Lewis, she said furiously. Why didn't you say something?
Say something about what? Jace moved away from Simon.
Simon's starving, Clary explained. He lost blood healing Izzy, and his supply was wrecked in the hall.
Why didn't you say something? Jace asked, rising and pushing back a lock of blonde hair.
Because, Simon said, it's not like there's animals I can feed on here.
There's us, Jace said.
I don't want to feed on my friend's blood.
Why not? Jace stepped past the fire and looked down at Simon. His expression was open and curious.
We've been here before, haven't we?
Last time you were starving, I gave you my blood.
It was a little homoerotic, maybe, but I'm secure in my sexuality.
Simon sighed internally. He could tell that under the flippancy, Jace was completely serious in his offer. Probably less because it was sexy than because Jace had a death wish the size of Brooklyn.
I'm not biting someone whose veins are full of heavenly fire, Simon said. I have no desire to be toasted from the inside out.
Clary swept her hair back, baring her throat.
Look, drink my blood. I always said you were welcome to it.
No, Jace said immediately, and Simon saw him remembering the hold in Valentine's ship. The way Simon had said, I would have killed you, and Jace had replied, wonderingly, I would have let you.
Oh, for God's sake, I'll do it.
Alex stood up, carefully repositioning Izzy on the blanket. He tucked the edge around her and straightened. Simon let his head fall back against the wall of the cave.
You don't even like me. Now you're offering me your blood?
You saved my sister. I owe you. Alex shrugged, his shadow long and dark in the light of the flames.
Right.
Simon swallowed awkwardly.
Okay.
Clary reached her hand down. After a moment, Simon took it and let her haul him to his feet. He couldn't help staring across the room at Isabel, asleep, half-wrapped in Alex's blue blanket. She was breathing, slow and steady. Izzy, still breathing, because of him. Simon took a step toward Alec and stumbled. Alec caught him and steadied him. His grip on Simon's shoulder was hard. Simon could feel Alec's tension in it, and he suddenly realized how bizarre the situation was. Jason Clary, gawking openly at them. Alec looking as if he were bracing himself to have a bucket of ice water dumped over his head. Alec turned his head a little to the left, baring his throat. He was staring off fixedly at the opposite wall. Simon decided he looked less like someone who was about to have ice water dumped on their head, and more like someone about to endure an embarrassing exam at the doctor's office.
I'm not doing this in front of everyone, Simon announced.
It's not spin the bottle, Simon, said Clary. It's just food.
Not that you're food, Alec, she added, when he glared.
She held her hands up.
Never mind.
Oh, for the angels, Alec began, and closed his hand around Simon's upper arm.
Come on, he said,
and dragged Simon partway down the tunnel that led back toward the gate, just far enough so that the others faded out of view, disappearing behind a jut of rock. Though Simon did hear the last thing Jace said, just before they faded out of earshot.
What?
They need privacy. It's an intimate moment.
I think you should just let me die, Simon said.
Shut up, Alec said, and pushed him up against the cave wall. He eyed Simon thoughtfully.
Does it have to be my neck?
No, Simon said, feeling as if he had wandered into a bizarre dream.
Wrists are okay too.
Alec began to push up the sleeve of his sweater. His arm was bare and pale, except where the marks were, and Simon could see his veins under the skin. Despite himself, he felt the sting of hunger, rousing him from exhaustion. He could smell blood, soft and salty, rich with the tang of daylight. Shadowhunter blood, like Izzy's. He ran his tongue along his upper teeth, and was only a little surprised to feel his canines hardening and sharpening into fangs.
I just want you to know, Alex said as he held his wrist out, that I realize that to you vampires this feeding business sometimes equals sexy times.
Simon's eyes widened.
My sister may have told me more than I wanted to know, Alec admitted.
Anyway, my point is that I am not attracted to you in the slightest.
Right, Simon said, and took Alec's hand.
He tried for a brotherly sort of grasp, but it didn't quite work, considering that he had to bend Alec's hand back to bear the vulnerable part of his wrist.
Well, you don't ring my bells either, so I guess we're even. Although you could have faked it for 5.
No, I couldn't, Alec said. I hate it when straight guys think all gay guys are attracted to them. I'm not attracted to every guy any more than you are attracted to every girl.
Simon took a deep, purposeful breath. It was always a strange feeling, breathing when he didn't need to, but it was calming.
Alec, he said, chill. I don't think you're in love with me. In fact, most of the time I think you hate me.
Alec paused.
I don't hate you. Why would I hate you?
Because I'm a downworlder? Because I'm a vampire who's in love with your sister and you think she's too good for me?
Don't you? Alec said, but it was without rancor.
After a moment, he smiled a little. That Lightwood smile that lit up his face and made Simon think of Izzy.
She's my little sister. I think she's too good for everyone.
But you're a good person, Simon. Regardless of whether you're a vampire, too. You're loyal, and you're smart, and you make Isabel happy. I don't know why, but you do. I know I didn't like you when I met you, but that changed, and I'd hardly judge my sister for dating a downworlder.
Simon stood very still. Alec was all right with warlocks, he thought. That much was obvious enough. But warlocks were born what they were. Alec was the most conservative of the Lightwood children. He wasn't chaos-loving or risk-taking, like Jace and Isabel. And Simon had always felt it in him, that sense that a vampire was a human transformed into something wrong.
You wouldn't agree to being a vampire, Simon said. Not even to be with Magnus forever, right? You didn't want to live forever. You wanted to take his immortality away. That's why he broke up with you.
Alec flinched.
No, he said. No, I wouldn't want to be a vampire.
So you do think I'm less than you, Simon said.
Alec's voice cracked.
I'm trying, he said, and Simon felt it, felt how much Alec wanted to mean it, maybe even did mean it a little bit. And after all, if Simon hadn't been a vampire, he would still have been a mundane, still lesser. He felt Alec's pulse surge in the wrist he was holding.
Go ahead, Alec said, exhaling his words, clearly in an agony of waiting.
Just do it.
Brace yourself, Simon said, and lifted Alec's wrist to his mouth. Despite the tension between them, his body, hungry and deprived, responded. His muscles tightened, and his fang teeth snapped out of their own accord. He saw Alec's eyes darken with surprise and fear. Hunger spread like a fire through Simon's body, and he spoke out of the drowning depths of it, struggling to try to say something human to Alec. He hoped he was audible enough to be understood around his fangs.
I'm sorry about Magnus.
Me too. Now bite, Alec said. And Simon did, his fangs piercing fast and clean through the skin, the blood exploding into his mouth. He heard Alec gasp, and Simon gripped involuntarily tighter, as if to prevent Alec from trying to pull away. But Alec didn't try. His wild heartbeat was audible to Simon, pounding down through his veins like the tolling of a bell. Along with Alec's blood, Simon could taste the metal of fear, the spark of pain, and the eager flame of something else, something he had tasted the first time he had drunk Jace's blood on the filthy metal floor of Valentine's ship. Maybe all Shadowhunters did have a death wish, after all.
20. The Serpents of the Dust. When Alec and Simon returned to the central cave, they found Isabel still curled asleep among a pile of blankets. Jace was sitting by the fire, leaning back on his hands, the play of light and shadow dancing across his face. Clary lay with her head on his lap, though Simon could see by the shimmer of her eyes as she watched them approach that she wasn't asleep. Jace raised his eyebrows.
Walk of shame, boys.
Alec glowered. He stood with his left wrist turned in, hiding the puncture marks, though they were mostly faded thanks to the arazi he'd put on his wrist. He hadn't pushed Simon away, had let him drink until Simon had stopped himself, and as a result, he was a little pale. It wasn't sexy, he said.
It was a little sexy, Simon said.
He felt much better, having fed, and he couldn't help but poke at Alec a bit.
It wasn't, said Alec.
I had some feelings, said Simon.
Do feel free to agonize about it on your own time, said Alec, and bent down to grab the strap of his backpack. I'm going to take watch.
Clary sat up with a yawn. Are you sure? Do you need a blood replacement rune?
I already put on two, Alec said. I'll be fine.
He straightened up and glanced at his sleeping sister.
Just look after Isabel, okay?
His gaze went to Simon. Especially you, vampire. Alec headed off down the corridor, his witchlight casting his shadow, long and spidery, against the cave wall. Jason Clary exchanged a quick look before Jace scrambled to his feet and followed Alec into the tunnel. Simon could hear their voices, soft murmurs through the rock, though he couldn't make out any of the words. Alec's words echoed in his head.
Look after Isabel.
He thought of Alec in the tunnel.
You're loyal and smart, and you make Isabel happy. I don't know why, but you do.
The idea of making Isabel happy filled him with a sense of warmth. Simon sat down quietly beside her. She was like a cat curled up in a ball of blankets, her head pillowed on her arm. He eased himself gently down to lie next to her. She was alive because of him, and her brother had done the closest thing he would probably ever do to giving them his blessing. He heard Clary, over on the other side of the fire, laugh softly.
Good night, Simon, she said.
Simon could feel Isabel's hair, as soft as spun silk, under his cheek.
Good night, he said,
and closed his eyes, his veins full of lightwood blood. Jace caught up easily with Alec, who had paused where the cave corridor curved away toward the gate. The walls of the corridor were smooth, as if worn away by years of water or wind, not chisels, though Jace had no doubt the passages were man-made. Alec, leaning against the cave wall, clearly waiting for Jace, raised his witchlight.
Is something wrong?
Jace slowed his pace as he neared his parabatai.
I just wanted to make sure you were right.
Alec shrugged with one shoulder.
As much as I can be, I guess.
I'm sorry, Jace said.
Again. I take stupid risks. I can't help it.
We let you, said Alec.
Sometimes your risks pay off.
We let you because we have to let you.
Because if we didn't let you, nothing would ever get done.
He rubbed at his face with his torn sleeve.
Isabel would say the same thing.
We never got to finish our conversation before, Jay said.
I just wanted to say that you don't always have to be all right. I asked you to be my parabatai because I needed you. But you're allowed to need me too. This, he indicated his own parabatai rune, means you are the better, other half of me. And I care about you more than I care about myself. Remember that. I'm sorry I didn't realize how much you were hurting. I didn't see it then, but I see it now.
Alec was very still for a moment, barely breathing. Then, to Jace's surprise, he reached out and ruffled Jace's hair, the way an older brother might ruffle his younger sibling's hair. His smile was cautious, but it was full of real affection.
Thanks for seeing me, he said, and walked off down the tunnel.
Clary? She woke up slowly, out of mellow dreams of warmth and fire, the smell of hay and apples. In the dream, she'd been on Luke's farm, hanging upside down from a tree branch, laughing as Simon waved from below. Slowly, she became aware of the hard stone under her hips and back, her head pillowed on Jace's legs. Clary, he said again, still whispering. Simon and Isabel were sprawled together some distance away, a dark heap in the shadows. Jace's eyes glimmered down at her, pale gold and dancing with reflected firelight. I want a bath. Yeah, well, I want $1 million, she said, rubbing at her eyes. We all want something. He cocked an eyebrow. Come on, think about it, he said. That cavern, the one with the lake? We could. Clary thought of the cavern, The lovely blue water as deep as twilight and felt suddenly as if she were encrusted with a layer of grime, dirt and blood and ichor and sweat, her hair knotted back into a greasy tangle. Jace's eyes danced, and Clary felt that familiar surge inside her chest, that pull that she had felt since the first time she'd ever seen him. She couldn't pinpoint the exact moment she'd fallen in love with Jace, but there had always been something about him that reminded her of a lion, a wild animal unfettered by rules, the promise of a life of freedom. Never I can't, but always I can. Always the risk and the surety, never the fear or the question. She scrambled to her feet as quietly as she could. All right. He was up instantly, taking her hand and tugging her down the west corridor that led away from the central cave. They went in silence, her witchlight lighting the way, a silence Clary felt almost afraid to break, as if she would be shattering the illusory calm of a dream or a spell. The massive cavern opened in front of them suddenly, and she put her runestone away, dousing its light. The bioluminescence of the cave was enough, light shimmering out from the walls, from the glimmering stalactites that hung from the roof like electrified icicles. Knives of light pierced the shadows. Jace let go of her hand and walked down the steps of the path down to the edge of the water, where the small beach was powdery and fine, glittering with mica. He paused a few feet from the water and said, "Thank you." She looked over at him in surprise. "For what?" "Last night," he said. "You saved me. The heavenly fire would have killed me, I think. What you did..." "We still can't tell the others," she said.
"I didn't last night, did I?" he asked.
It was true. Jace and Clary had maintained the fiction that Clary had simply helped Jace control and dissipate the fire, and that nothing else had changed. "We can't risk them giving it away, even by the wrong kind of glance or expression," she said. "You and I, we've had some practice hiding things from Sebastian, but they haven't. It wouldn't be fair to them. I almost wish we didn't know..." She trailed off, unnerved by his lack of response. Jace was looking at the water, blue and depthless, his back to her. She took a step forward and tapped him lightly on the shoulder. "Jace," she said, "if you want to do something different, if you think we should make another plan..." He turned and suddenly she was in the circle of his arms. It sent a shock through her whole body. His hands cupped her shoulder blades, his fingers stroking lightly along the material of her shirt. She shivered, thoughts flying out of her head like feathers scattered on the wind. "When," he said, "did you get so careful?"
"I'm not careful," she said as he touched his lips to her temple.
His warm breath stirred the curls by her ear.
"I'm just not you."
She felt him laugh. His hands slid down her sides, gripped her waist.
"That you are definitely not. Much prettier."
"You must love me," she said, breath hitching as his lips traveled excruciatingly slowly along her jaw.
"I never thought you'd admit anyone was prettier than you."
She started as his mouth found her own, his lips parting to taste hers, and she leaned up and into the kiss, determined to take back some control. She wound her arms around his neck, opening her mouth to him, and nipped gently at his bottom lip. It had more of an effect than she'd bargained for. His hands tightened on her waist, and he groaned low into her mouth. A moment later, he'd broken away, flushed, his eyes glittering.
"You're all right," he said. "You want this?"
She nodded, swallowing. Her whole body felt as if it were vibrating like a plucked string.
"Yes, I do, It's just, for so long I haven't really been able to touch you, and now I can," he said. "But maybe this isn't the place."
"Well, we are filthy," she admitted.
"Filthy seems a bit judgmental."
Clary raised her hands, palms up. There was dirt embedded in her skin and under her nails. She grinned at him. "I mean literally," she said, and indicated the water nearby with a jerk of her chin. "Weren't we going to wash off? In the water?" The sparkle in his eyes darkened them to amber.
"Right," he said, and reached up to unzip his jacket.
Clary almost squeaked, "What are you doing?" But it was perfectly obvious what he was doing. She'd said in the water, and it wasn't like they could wade in with their gear on. She just hadn't quite thought this far ahead. He dropped the jacket and pulled his t-shirt off over his head,
The collar caught for a moment, and Clary just stared, suddenly hyper-aware of the fact that they were alone, and of his body. Honey-coloured skin mapped with old and new marks, a fading scar just under the curve of his left pectoral muscle. Flat, ridged stomach tapering to narrow hips. He'd lost weight, and his weapons belt hung loose. Legs, arms, graceful like a dancer's. He pulled free of the shirt and shook out his bright hair. And she thought with a sudden sinking in her stomach that it just wasn't possible that he was hers. He wasn't that sort of person ordinary people got to be near, much less touch. And then he looked up at her, hands on his belt, and smiled his familiar crooked smile. "Keeping your clothes on," he said. "I could promise not to look, but I'd be lying." Clary unzipped her gear jacket and threw it at him. He caught it and dropped it onto the pile of his clothes, grinning. He unlooped his belt, dropped it as well. "Pervert," she said, "though you get points for being honest about it." "I'm 17, we're all perverts," he said, kicking his shoes off and stepping out of his pants. He was wearing black boxer shorts, and to Clary's mixed relief and slight regret, he kept them on as he stepped into the water, wading in knee-deep. "Or at least I'll be 17 in a few weeks," he called back over his shoulder. "I did the math with my father's letters and the time of the uprising. I was born in January." Something about the complete normalcy of his tone set Clary at ease. She towed off her boots, pulled her t-shirt off and then her pants, and went into the edge of the water. It was cool but not cold, lapping up to her ankles. Jace looked up at her and smiled. His eyes travelled down from her face to her body, her plain cotton panties and bra. She wished she'd worn something prettier, but it wasn't like fancy lingerie had been on her packing list for the demon realms. Her bra was pale blue cotton, the totally boring kind you could buy at the supermarket, though Jace was looking at it like it was something exotic and amazing. He flushed suddenly and averted his eyes, backing away so that the water rose to cover him, up to his shoulders. He ducked under and resurfaced again, looking less flustered but a lot wetter, his hair dark gold and streaming rivulets. "It's easier if you get in fast," he said. Clary took a breath and dived forward, the water closing over her head. And it was gorgeous, dark blue shot with threads of silver from the light above. The powdery stone had mixed with the water, giving it a heavy, soft texture. It was easy to float. The moment she let herself, she bobbed to the surface, shaking water from her hair. She sighed in relief. There was no soap, but she rubbed her hands together, watching the flakes of dirt and blood melt away into the water. Her hair floated on the surface, red mixing with the blue. A spray of water droplets made her look up. Jace was a few feet away, shaking out his hair. "I guess that makes me a year older than you," he said. "I'm cradle robbing." 6 months, Clary corrected. "And you're a Capricorn, huh? Stubborn, reckless, bends the rules. Sounds about right." He caught hold of her hips and pulled her toward him through the water. It was just deep enough that his feet touched the ground, but hers didn't quite. She clenched her hands on his shoulders to keep herself upright as he drew her legs around his waist. She stared down at him, heat coiling in her stomach, at the sleek, wet lines of his neck and shoulders and chest. The water droplets caught in his eyelashes like stars. He rose up to kiss her just as she leaned in, their lips crushed together with a force that sent a shock of pleasure pain through her. His hands slid up her skin. She cupped the back of his head, fingers tangling in wet curls. He parted her lips, stroked inside with his tongue. They were both shuddering and she was gasping, her breath mingling with his. He reached behind himself with one hand to steady them on the wall of the cave. But it was slick with water and he half slipped. Clary broke away from kissing him as he found his footing, his left arm still wrapped tightly against her, pressing her body to his. His pupils were blown wide, his heart hammering against her. "That was..." he gasped and pressed his face to the juncture of her neck and shoulder and breathed as if he were breathing her in. He was shaking a little, although his grip on her was steady and firm. "That was... intense." "It's been a while," she murmured, touching his hair gently. "Since we could, you know, let go. At all. I can't believe it," he said. "I still can't, that I can kiss you now, touch you, actually touch you, without being afraid." He pressed a kiss to her throat and she jumped. He tipped his head back to look up at her.
Water trickled down his face like tears, outlining the sharp edges of cheekbones, the curve of his jaw.
Reckless, he said.
You know, when I first showed up at the Institute, Alec called me reckless so many times that I went and looked it up in the dictionary. Not that I didn't already know what it meant, but I always kind of thought it meant brave. It actually meant someone who doesn't care about the consequences of their actions.
Clary felt stung on behalf of Small Jace.
But you do care.
Not enough, maybe. Not all the time.
His voice shook.
Like the way I love you, I loved you recklessly from the moment I knew you. I never cared about the consequences. I told myself I did. I told myself you wanted me to, and so I tried, but I never did. I wanted you more than I wanted to be good. I wanted you more than I wanted anything, ever.
His muscles were rigid under her grip, his body thrumming with tension. She leaned in to brush her lips across his, to kiss the tension away, but he pulled back, biting against his lower lip hard enough to whiten the skin.
Clary, he said roughly, wait, just wait.
Clary felt momentarily dazed. Jace loved kissing, he could kiss for hours and he was good at it. And he wasn't uninterested, he was very interested. She braced her knees on either side of his hips and said uncertainly, is everything all right?
I have to tell you something.
Oh no. She dropped her head onto his shoulder.
Okay, what is it?
Remember when we came through into the demon realm and everyone saw something? He asked. And I said I didn't.
You don't have to tell me what you saw, Clary said gently. It's your business.
I do, he said. You should know, I saw a room with two thrones in it, gold and ivory thrones, and through the window I could see the world and it was ashes. Like this world, but the destruction was newer. The fires were still burning and the sky was full of horrible flying things. Sebastian was sitting on one of the thrones, and I was sitting on the other. You were there, and Alec and Izzy and Max. He swallowed. But you were all in a cage. A big cage with a massive lock on the door, and I knew I had put you in it and turned the key. But I didn't feel regret, I felt triumph.
He exhaled hard.
You can shove me away in disgust now, it's fine. But of course it wasn't fine. Nothing about his tone, flat and dead and devoid of hope, was fine. Clary shivered in his arms, not from horror but from pity, and from the tension of knowing how delicate Jace's faith in himself was, and how careful her answer had to be.
The demon showed us what it thought we wanted, she said finally. Not what we actually want. It got things wrong, that's how we all managed to break free. By the time we found you, you'd already broken free on your own. So what it showed you, that wasn't what you want. When Valentine raised you, he controlled everything. Nothing was ever safe and nothing you loved was safe. So the demon looked inside you and saw that. That child's fantasy of completely controlling the world so nothing bad could happen to the people he loves. And it tried to give you that, but it wasn't what you want, not really. So you woke up. She touched his cheek. Some part of you is still that little boy who thinks to love is to destroy, but you're learning every day. For a moment, he just looked at her in astonishment, his lips parted slightly. Clary felt her cheeks flush. He was looking at her like she was the first star that had ever come out in the sky. A miracle painted across the face of the world that he could barely believe in.
Let me, he said and broke off. Can I kiss you?
Instead of nodding, she leaned down to press her lips to his. If their first kiss in the water had been a sort of explosion, this was like a sun going supernova. It was a hard, hot, driving kiss, a nip at her lower lip, and the clash of tongues and teeth, both of them pressing as hard as they could to get close, closer. They were glued together, skin and fabric, a heady mix of the chill of the water, the heat of their bodies, and the frictionless slide of damp skin. His arms wrapped her completely, and suddenly he was lifting her as he walked them both out the lake, water pouring off them in streams. He went down on his knees on the powdery sand beach, laying her as gently as he could on top of the pile of the heaped clothes. She scrabbled for purchase for a moment and then gave up, lying back and pulling him down on top of her, kissing him fiercely until he groaned and whispered, Clary, I can't. You have to tell me, I can't think.
She wound her hands into his hair, drawing back just enough to see his face. He was flushed, his eyes black with desire, his hair beginning to curl as it dried, hanging into his eyes. She tugged lightly at the strands wound between her fingers.
"It's okay," she whispered back. "It's okay, we don't have to stop, I want to."
She kissed him slow and hard.
"I want to if you do."
"If I want to?" There was a wild edge to his soft laugh. "Can't you tell?" And then he was kissing her again, sucking her lower lip into his mouth, kissing her throat and mouthing her collarbone as she ran her hands all over him, free in the knowledge that she could touch him as much as she liked, however she liked. She felt as if she were drawing him, her hands mapping his body, the slope of his back, flat stomach, the indentations above his hips, the muscles in his arms, as if, like a painting, he were coming to life under her hands. When his hand slid underneath her bra, she gasped at the sensation, then nodded at him when he froze, his eyes questioning.
"Go on."
He stopped at each moment, stopped before removing each piece of clothing from either of them, asking with eyes and words if he should keep going, and each time she nodded and said, "Yes, go on, yes." And when finally there was nothing between them but skin, she stilled her hands, thinking that there was no way to ever be closer to a person than this, that to take another step would be like cracking open her chest and exposing her heart. She felt Jace's muscles flex as he reached past her for something and heard the crackle of foil. Suddenly, everything seemed very real. She felt the sudden flash of nerves. This was really happening. He stilled. His free hand was cradling her head. His elbows dug deep into the sand on either side of her, keeping his weight off her body. All of him was tense and shaking, and the pupils of his eyes were wide, the irises just rims of gold. "Is something wrong?" Hearing Jace sound uncertain, she thought maybe her heart was cracking, shattering into pieces.
"No,"
she whispered and pulled him down again. They both tasted salt.
"Kiss me,"
she pleaded, and he did. Hot, languorous, slow kisses that sped up as his heartbeat did, as the movement of their bodies quickened against each other. Each kiss was different, each rising higher and higher like a spark as a fire grew. Quick, soft kisses that told her he loved her, long, slow, worshipful kisses that said he trusted her, playful, light kisses that said that he still had hope, adoring kisses that said he had faith in her as he did in no one else. Clary abandoned herself to the kisses, the language of them, the wordless speech that passed between the two of them. His hands were shaking, but they were quick and skilled on her body, light touches maddening her until she pushed and pulled at him, urging him on with the mute appeal of fingers and lips and hands. And even at the final moment when she did flinch, she pressed him to go on, wrapping herself around him, not letting him go. She kept her eyes wide open as he shuddered apart, his face against her neck, saying her name over and over, and when finally she closed her eyes, she thought she saw the cavern blaze up in gold and white, wrapping them both in heavenly fire, the most beautiful thing she had ever seen.
Simon was vaguely aware of Clary and Jace standing up and leaving the cavern, whispering to each other as they went. "Not as subtle as you think you are," he thought of them, half amused. But he hardly grudged them the time together, considering what they were all going to face the next day.
"Simon."
It was barely a whisper, but Simon propped himself up on his elbow and looked down at Isabel. She turned onto her back and gazed up at him. Her eyes were very huge and dark, her cheeks flushed. His chest tightened with anxiety.
"Are you all right?" he said. "Are you feverish?"
She shook her head and wiggled partway out of her cocoon of blankets.
"Just warm. Who wrapped me up like a mummy?"
"Alec," Simon said. "I mean, maybe you should stay in them."
"I'd rather not,"
Isabel said, wrapping her arms around his shoulders and pulling him close to her.
"I can't warm you up. No body heat."
His voice sounded a little tinny. She nuzzled her way into the juncture of his collarbone and shoulder. "I think we have established in so many ways that I am hot enough for the both of us." Unable to help it, Simon reached out to run his hands up her back. She had shed her gear and wore only a black thermal top, the material thick and soft under his fingers. She felt substantial and real, human and breathing,
and he silently thanked the god whose name he could now say that she was all right. "Is there anyone else here?" "Jason Clary snuck off, and Alec took first watch," Simon said. "We're alone. I mean, not alone alone, like I wouldn't..." He gasped as she rolled over so that she was on top of him, pinning him to the ground. She laid an arm delicately across his chest. "I wouldn't maybe do that," he said. "Not that you should stop." "You saved my life," she said. "I didn't." He broke off as she narrowed her eyes. "I am a brave, heroic rescuer," he tried. "Mm-hmm." She nudged his chin with hers. "No Lord Montgomery stuff," he warned. "Anyone could walk in." "What about regular kissing?" "Seems all right," he said. And immediately Isabel was kissing him, her lips almost unbearably soft. His hands found their way up under her shirt and smoothed up her spine, tracing the line of her shoulder blades. When she broke away, her lips were reddened, and he could see the blood pounding in her throat. Isabel's blood, salty sweet, and even though he wasn't hungry, he wanted. "You can bite me," she whispered. "No." Simon wriggled back slightly. "No, you've lost too much blood, I can't." He could feel his chest heaving with unnecessary breath. "You were asleep when we were talking about it, but we can't stay here. Clary put glamour runes on the entrances, but they won't hold that long and we're running out of food. The atmosphere is making everyone sicker and weaker, and Sebastian will find us. We have to go to him tomorrow at the guard." He raked curled fingers through her soft hair. "And that means you need all your strength." She pressed her lips together, her eyes darting over him. "When we came through from the fairy court, into this world, what did you see?" He touched her face lightly, not wanting to lie, but the truth. The truth was hard and awkward. "Iz, we don't have to. I saw Max," she said. "But I saw you too. You were my boyfriend. We lived together and my whole family accepted you. I can tell myself I don't want you to be part of my life. But my heart knows differently," she said. "You weaseled your way into my life, Simon Lewis. And I don't know how or why or even when, but it happened. And I kind of hate it, but I can't change it. And here it is." He made a small choking sound. "Isabel?" "Now tell me what you saw," she said. And her eyes glittered like mica. Simon braced his hands against the stone floor of the cave. "I saw me being famous. A rock star," he said slowly. "I was rich. My family was together. And I was with Clary. She was my girlfriend." He felt Isabel tense on top of him, felt her start to roll away, and he caught at her arms. "Isabel, listen. Listen. She was my girlfriend. And then when she came to tell me she loved me, I said, 'I love you too. Isabel.'" She stared at him. "Isabel," he said. "It snapped me out of the vision when I said your name. Because I knew the vision was wrong. It wasn't what I really wanted." "Why do you tell me you love me only when you're drunk or dreaming?" she asked. "I have awful timing," said Simon. "But it doesn't mean I don't mean it. There are things we want. Down under what we know, even under what we feel. There are things our souls want, and mine wants you." He felt her exhale. "Say it," she said. "Say it, Soba." "I love you," he said. "I don't want you to say it back unless you mean it, but I love you." She leaned back over him and pressed the pads of her fingertips against his. "I mean it." He raised himself up on his elbows, just as she leaned down, and their lips met. They kissed, long and soft and sweet and gentle. And then Isabel pulled back slightly, her breathing ragged, and Simon said, "So, have we DTR'd now?" Isabel shrugged. "I have no idea what that means." Simon hid the fact that he was inordinately pleased by this. "Are we officially boyfriend and girlfriend? Is there a shadow hunter ritual? Should I change my Facebook status from 'it's complicated' to 'in a relationship'?" Isabel screwed up her nose adorably. "You have a book that's also a face." Simon laughed, and Isabel bent down and kissed him again. This time he reached up to draw her down, and they wrapped themselves around each other, tangled in blankets, kissing and whispering. He lost himself in the pleasure of the taste of her mouth, the curve of her hip under his hand, the warm skin of her back. He forgot that they were in a demon realm, that they were going into battle the next day, that they might never see home again. Everything faded away, and was Isabel.
"Why does this keep happening?"
There was a sound of shattering glass as they both sat up to see Alec glaring at them. He had dropped the empty bottle of wine he had been carrying, and there were bits of sparkly glass all over the cave floor.
"Why can't you go somewhere else to do these horrible things? My eyes!"
"It's a demon realm, Alec," Isabel said. "There's nowhere for us to go."
"And you said I should look after her," Simon began, then realized that this would not be a productive line of conversation, and shut up. Alec flopped down on the opposite side of the fire and glared at them both.
"And where have Jace and Clary gone?"
"Ah," said Simon delicately. "Who can say?"
"Straight people," Alec declared. "Why can't they control themselves?"
"It's a mystery," Simon agreed, and lay back down to sleep.
Gia Penhallow sat on the desk in her office. It felt so casual, she couldn't help but wonder if it would be frowned on, the console sitting irreverently on the ancient desk of power. But she was alone in the room and tired beyond all measures of tired. In her hand, she gripped a note that had come from New York, a warlock's fire message, powerful enough to bypass the wards around the city. She recognized the handwriting as Katarina Loss's, but the words were not Katarina's. "Consul Penhallow, this is Maya Roberts, temporary leader of the New York Pack. We understand you are doing what you can to bring our Luke and the other prisoners back. We appreciate that. As a sign of our good faith, I wish to pass a message to you. Sebastian and his forces will attack Alicante tomorrow night. Please do what you can to be ready. I wish we could be there fighting by your side, but I know that isn't possible. Sometimes it is only possible to warn and wait and hope. Remember that the Clave and the Council, Shadow Hunters and Downworlders together, are the light of the world. With hope, Maya Roberts." With hope. Gia folded the letter again and slipped it into her pocket. She thought of the city out there under the night sky, the pale silver of the demon towers soon to turn to the red of war. She thought of her husband and her daughter. She thought of the boxes and boxes that had arrived from Teresa Gray only a short while ago, rising up through the earth in Angel Square, each box stamped with the spiral symbol of the labyrinth. She felt a stirring in her heart, some fear but also some relief that finally the time was coming. Finally the waiting would be over, finally they would have their chance. She knew that the Shadow Hunters of Alicante would fight to the last, with determination, with bravery, with stubbornness, with vengeance, with glory, with hope.
21. The Keys of Death and Hell.
"God, my head,"
Alec said as he and Jace knelt beside a ridge of rock that crowned the top of a gray, scree-covered hill. The rock gave them cover, and past it, using far-sighted runes, they could see the half-ruined fortress, and all around it, dark Shadow Hunters clustered like ants. It was like a warped mirror of Alicante's guard hill. The structure atop it resembled the guard they knew, but with a massive wall around it, the fortress enclosed within, like a garden in a cloister.
"Maybe you shouldn't have drunk so much last night," Jace said, leaning forward and narrowing his eyes.
All around the wall, the Andarkin stood in concentric rings, a tight group in front of the gates that led inside. There were smaller groups of them at strategic points up and down the hill. Alec could see Jace computing the numbers of the enemy, considering and discarding strategies in his head.
"Maybe you should try looking a little less smug about what you did last night," said Alec.
Jace nearly fell off the ridge.
"I do not look smug."
"Well," he amended, "no more than usual."
"Please," Alec said, pulling out his steely. "I can read your face like a very open, very pornographic book. I wish I couldn't."
Is this your way of telling me to shut my face? Jace inquired. Remember when you mocked me for sneaking around with Magnus and asked me if I'd fallen on my neck? Alec asked, placing the tip of his steely against his forearm and starting to draw an Arazi. This is payback. Jace snorted and grabbed the steely from Alec. Give me that, he said, and finished off the Arazi for him, with his usual messy flourish. Alec felt the numbing kick as his headache started to recede. Jace turned his attention back to the hill. You know what's interesting, he said. I've seen a few flying demons, but they're staying well away from the Dark God. Alec raised an eyebrow. Dark God? Got a better name. Jace shrugged. Anyway, they're staying away from the Dark God in the hill. They serve Sebastian, but they seem to be respecting his space. Well, they can't be too far away, said Alec. They got to the Quartz Hall pretty fast when you triggered that alarm. They could be inside the fortress, said Jace, voicing what they were both thinking. I wish you'd managed to get the Skeptron, Alec said in a subdued voice. I got the feeling it could take out a lot of demons. If it still worked after all these years. Jace had an odd expression on his face. Alec hastened to add, not that anyone could have gotten it. You tried. I'm not so sure, Jace said, his expression both calculating and far away. Come on, let's get back to the others. There was no time to reply. Jace was already retreating. Alec followed him, crawling backward, out of range of sight of the Dark Guard. Once they had gone enough of a distance, they straightened up and half slid down the scree slope to where the others were waiting. Simon was standing by Izzy, and Clary had her sketch pad and a pen out and was drawing runes. From the way she was shaking her head, tearing out the pages and crumpling them in her hand, it wasn't going as well as she might have liked. Are you littering? Jace demanded as he and Alec jogged to a stop beside the other three. Clary gave him what was probably meant to be a withering look, but which came out barely soppy. Jace returned it just as soppily. Alec wondered what would happen if he made a sacrifice to the dark demon gods of this world in exchange for not being constantly reminded that he was single. And not just single. He didn't only miss Magnus. He was terrified for him, with a deep, constant aching terror that never went away completely. Jace, this world has been burned to a cinder, and every living creature is dead, Clary said. I'm fairly sure there's no one left to recycle. So what did you see? Isabel demanded. She hadn't been at all pleased to be left behind while Alec and Jace did recon, but Alec had insisted that she save her strength. She was listening to him more these days, Alec thought, in that way that Izzy only listened to people whose opinion she respected. It was nice. Here. Jace pulled a steely from his pocket and knelt down, shrugging off his gear jacket. The muscles of his back moved under his shirt as he used the pointed tip of the steely to draw in the yellowish dirt. Here's the Dark God. There's one way in, and that's through the gate in the outer wall. It's closed, but an open rune should take care of that. The question is how to get to the gate. The most defensible positions are here, here, and here. His steely made quick swipes in the dirt. So we could go around up the back. If the geography here is like it is in our Alicante, and it looks like it is, there's a natural pathway up the back of the hill. Once we get closer, we split here and here. The steely made swirls and patterns as he drew, and a patch of sweat darkened between his shoulder blades. And we try to herd any demons or undarken toward the center. He sat back, worrying at his lip. I can take out a lot of them, but I'll need you to keep them contained while I do it. Do you understand the plan? They all stared for a few silent moments. Then Simon pointed. What's that wobbly thing? He said. Is it a tree? Those are the gates, Jace said. Oh, said Isabel, pleased. So what are the swirly bits? Is there a moat? Those are trajectory lines. Honestly, am I the only person who's ever seen a strategy map? Jace demanded, throwing his steely down and raking his hand through his blonde hair. Do you understand anything I just said? No, Clary said. Your strategy is probably awesome, but your drawing skills are terrible, and the Undarken look like trees, and the fortress looks like a frog. There has to be a better way to explain. Jace sank back on his heels and crossed his arms. Well, I'd love to hear it. I have an idea, Simon said.
Remember how before I was talking about Dungeons and Dragons?
Vividly, Jace said. It was at dock time.
Simon ignored him. All the dark shadow hunters dress in red gear, he said, and they're not enormously bright or self-driven. Their wills seem to be subsumed, at least in part, by Sebastian's, right?
Right, Isabel said, and gave Jace a quelling look.
In D&D, my first move, when you're dealing with an opposing army like that, would be to lure away a group of them, say five, and take their clothes.
Is this so they have to go back to the fortress naked and their embarrassment will negatively affect morale? Said Jace. Because that seems complicated.
I'm pretty sure he means take their clothes and wear them as disguises, Clary said, so that we can sneak up to the gates unobserved. If the other and Darkened aren't very perceptive, they might not notice.
Jace looked at her in surprise. She shrugged.
It's in every movie, like, ever.
We don't watch movies, said Alec.
I think the question is whether Sebastian watches movies, said Isabel.
Is our strategy when we actually see him still trust me, by the way?
It's still trust me, Jace said.
Oh, good, Isabel said. For a second there, I was worried there was going to be an actual plan with, like, steps we could follow. You know, something reassuring.
There is a plan.
Jace slid his steely into his belt and rose fluidly to his feet. Simon's idea for how we get into Sebastian's fortress. We're going to do it. Simon stared at him.
Seriously?
Jace retrieved his jacket.
It's a good idea.
But it's my idea, Simon said.
And it was good. So we're doing it.
Congratulations. We're going up the hill the way I outlined, and then we're going to enact your plan when we get toward the top.
And when we get there, he turned to Clary.
That thing you did in the Seely Court. The way you jumped up and drew the rune on the wall. Could you do it again?
I don't see why not, Clary said.
Why?
Jace began to smile.
Emma sat on the bed in her small attic room surrounded by papers. She had finally liberated them from the folder she had taken from the consul's office. They were spread out on her blanket, illuminated by the light of the sun coming through the small window, though she could hardly bring herself to touch them. There were grainy photographs, taken under a bright Los Angeles sky, of the bodies of her parents. She could see now why they hadn't been able to bring the bodies to Idris. They had been stripped, their skin grey like ash, except where it was marked all over with ugly black scrawls, not like marks at all, but hideous. The sand around them was wet as if it had rained. They were far back from the tide line. Emma fought back the urge to throw up as she tried to force herself to absorb the information. When the bodies had been found, when they had been identified, and how they had crumbled away in clumps when the shadow hunters had tried to lift them. Emma. It was Helen, standing in the doorway. The light that spilled in through the window turned the edges of her hair to the color of silver, the way it had always done to Mark's. She looked more like Mark than ever. In fact, stress had made her thinner and revealed more clearly the delicate arches of her cheekbones, the points at the tops of her ears.
Where did you get those?
Emma raised her chin defiantly.
I took them from the consul's office.
Helen sat down on the edge of the bed.
Emma, you have to put them back.
Emma jabbed a finger at the papers.
They're not going to look to find out what happened to my parents, she said. They're saying it's just a random attack by the Indarkin, but it wasn't. I know it wasn't.
Emma, the Indarkin and their allies didn't just kill the shadow hunters of the Institute. They wiped out the Los Angeles Conclave.
It makes sense they'd go after your parents, too.
Why wouldn't they turn them? Emma demanded. They needed every warrior they could get. When you say they wiped out the Conclave, they didn't leave bodies, they turned them all.
Except the young and the very old.
Well, my parents were neither of those things.
Would you rather they'd been turned? Helen said quietly, and Emma knew she was thinking of her own father.
No. Emma said. But are you really saying that it doesn't matter who killed them, that I shouldn't even want to know why?
Why what?
Tiberius was standing in the door, his mop of unruly black curls tumbling into his eyes. He looked younger than his 10 years, an impression helped by the fact that his stuffed bee was dangling from one hand. His delicate face was smudged with tiredness.
Where's Julian?
He's down in the kitchen getting food, Helen said. Are you hungry?
Is he angry with me?
Ty asked, looking at Emma.
No, but you know he gets upset when you yell at him or hurt yourself, Emma said carefully. It was hard to know what might frighten Ty or send him into a tantrum. In her experience, it was better to always tell him the unvarnished truth. The sort of lies people routinely told children of the "this injection won't hurt a bit" variety were disastrous when told to Ty. Yesterday, Julian had spent quite a bit of time picking broken glass out of his brother's bloody feet and had explained to him rather sternly that if he ever walked on broken glass again, Julian would tell on him to the adults and he'd have to take whatever punishment he got. Ty had kicked him in response, leaving a bloody footprint on Jules's shirt. Jules wants you to be okay, Emma said now. That's all he wants. Helen reached out her arms for Ty. Emma didn't blame her. Ty looked small and huddled, and the way he was clutching his bee made her worried for him. She would have wanted to hug him too, but he didn't like to be touched, not by anyone but Livy. He flinched away from his half-sister and moved over to the window. After a moment, Emma joined him there, being careful to give him his space. Sebastian can get in and out of the city, said Ty. Yes, but he's one person, and he's not that interested in us. Besides, I believe the Clave has a plan to keep us safe. I believe the same thing, Ty muttered, looking down and out the window. He pointed. I just don't know if it'll work. It took Emma a moment to realize what he was indicating. The streets were crowded and not with pedestrians. Nephilim in the uniforms of the guard and some in gear were moving back and forth in the streets, carrying hammers and nails and boxes of objects that made Emma stare. Scissors and horseshoes, knives and daggers and assorted weapons, even boxes of what looked like earth. One man carried several burlap sacks marked salt. Each box and bag had a symbol stamped on it, a spiral. Emma had seen it before in her codex, the sigil of the spiral labyrinth of the warlocks. Cold iron, said Ty thoughtfully. Raw, not heated and shaped, salt and grave dirt. There was a look on Helen's face, that look adults got when they knew something but didn't want to tell you what it was. Emma looked over at Ty, quiet and composed, his serious gray eyes tracking up and down the streets outside. Beside him stood Helen, who had risen up off the bed, her expression anxious. They sent for magical ammunition, said Ty, from the spiral labyrinth. Or maybe it was the warlock's idea, it's hard to know. Emma stared through the glass and then back at Ty, who looked up at her through his long lashes. What does it mean? She asked. Ty smiled his rare, unpracticed smile. It means what Mark said in his note was true, he said. Clary didn't think she'd ever been so heavily ruined, or had ever seen the Lightwoods covered in as many of the magical sigils as they were now. She had done them all herself, putting everything she had into them, all of her desire for them all to be safe, all of her yearning to find her mother and Luke. Jace's arms looked like a map, runes spread down onto his collarbones and chest, the backs of his hands. Clary's own skin looked foreign to her when she caught sight of it. She remembered once seeing a boy who had the elaborate musculature of the human body tattooed onto his skin, and thinking it was as if he had been turned to glass. It was a bit like that now, she thought, looking around at her companions as they toiled up the hill toward the Dark Guard. The roadmap of their bravery and hopes, their dreams and desires, marked clearly on their bodies. Shadow hunters weren't always the most forthcoming of people, but their skins were honest. Clary had covered herself with healing runes, but they weren't enough to keep her lungs from aching from the constant dust. She remembered what Jace had said about the two of them suffering more than the others because of their higher concentration of angel blood. She stopped to cough now and turned away, spitting up black. She wiped her hand across her mouth quickly before Jace could turn and see. Jace's drawing skills might have been poor, but his strategy was faultless. They were making their way upward in a sort of zigzag formation, darting from one heap of blackened stone to another. With the foliage all gone, the stone was the only cover the hill provided. The hill was mostly stripped of trees, only a few dead stumps here and there. They had met only a single Indarkand, quickly dispatched, their blood soaking into the ashy earth. Clary remembered the path up to the guard in Alicante, green and lovely, and looked with hatred at the wasteland around her. The air was heavy and hot, as if the burned orange sun were pressing down on them. Clary joined the others behind a high cairn. They had refilled their bottles that morning from the lake in the cave, and Alec was sharing around some water, his grim face streaked with black dust. "This is the last of it," he said, and handed it to Isabel. She took a tiny sip and passed it to Simon, who shook his head, he didn't need water, and passed it on to Clary. Jace looked at Clary. She could see herself reflected in his eyes, looking small and pale and dirty. She wondered if she looked different to him after last night. She had almost expected him to look different to her when she woke up in the morning by the cold remains of the fire, with his hand in hers. But he was the same Jace she had always loved. And he looked at her as he always had, as if she were a small miracle, the kind you kept close to your heart. Clary took a mouthful of water and passed the thermos to Jace, who tipped his head back and swallowed. She watched the muscles move in his throat with a brief fascination and then looked away before she could blush. Okay, maybe some things had changed, but this really wasn't the time to be thinking about it. "That's it," Jay said, and dropped the now empty thermos. They all watched it roll among the rocks. No more water. "One less thing to carry," he added, trying to sound light, but his voice came out sounding dry as the dust around them. His lips were cracked and bleeding slightly despite his Arazis. Alec had shadows under his eyes and a nervous twitch in his left hand. Isabel's eyes were red with dust and she blinked and rubbed at them when she thought no one was watching. They all looked pretty terrible, Clary thought, with the possible exception of Simon, who mostly looked the same. He was standing close to the cairn, his fingers resting lightly on a ledge of stone. "These are graves," he said suddenly. Jace looked up. "What?" "These rock piles. They're graves, old ones. People fell in battle and they buried them by covering their bodies with stones." "Shadow hunters," Alec said. "Who else would die defending Guard Hill?" Jace touched the stones with a leather-gloved hand and frowned. "We burn our dead." "Maybe not in this world," Isabel said. "Things are different. Maybe they didn't have time. Maybe it was their last stand." "Stop," Simon said. He had frozen, a look of intense concentration on his face. "Someone's coming. Someone human." "How do you know they're human?" Clary dropped her voice. "Blood," he said succinctly. "Demon blood smells different. These are people, Nephilim, but not." Jace made a quick, quieting gesture with his hand, and they all fell silent. He pressed his back to the cairn and peered around the side. Clary saw his jaw tighten. "Endarkened," he said in a low voice. "Five of them." "Perfect number," said Alec with a surprisingly wolfish grin. His bow was in his hands almost before Clary could see the movement, and he stepped sideways out of the shelter of the rocks and let his arrow fly. She saw Jace's surprised expression. He hadn't been expecting Alec to move first, and then he caught hold of one of the rocks of the cairn and flung himself up and over. Isabel sprang after him like a cat, and Simon followed, fast and unerring, his hands bare. It was as if this world had been made for those who were already dead, Clary thought. And then she heard a long, gurgling cry cut abruptly short. She reached for Heosphorus, thought better of it, and seized a dagger from her weapons belt before hurling herself around the side of the cairn. There was an incline behind it, the dark guard looming black and ruined above them. Four shadow hunters, dressed in red, were looking around in shock and surprise. One of their company, a blonde woman, was sprawled on the ground, her body pointing uphill, an arrow protruding from her throat. "That explains the gurgling noise," Clary thought a little dizzily as Alec notched his bow again and sent another arrow flying. A second man, dark-haired and paunchy, staggered back with a yell, the arrow in his leg. Isabel was on him in an instant, her whip slicing across his throat. As the man went down, Jace leaped and rode his body to the ground, using the force of the fool to hurl his own body forward. His blades flashed with a scissoring motion, slicing the head off a bold man whose red gear was splotched with patches of dried blood. More blood fountained, drenching the scarlet gear with another layer of red as the headless corpse slid to the ground. There was a shriek, and the woman who had been standing behind him lifted a curled blade to slice at Jace. Clary whipped her dagger forward and let it fly. It buried itself in the woman's forehead and she folded silently to the ground without another cry.
The last of the Indarkin began to run, stumbling uphill. Simon flashed past Clary, a movement too swift to see, and sprang like a cat. The Indarkin man went down with a gasp of terror, and Clary saw Simon rear up over him and strike like a snake. There was a sound like tearing paper. They all looked away. After a few long moments, Simon arose from the still body and came down the hill toward them. There was blood on his shirt and blood on his hands and face. He turned his face to the side, coughed and spat, looking sick. "Bitter," he said. "The blood, it tastes like Sebastian's." Isabel looked ill, in a way that she hadn't when she'd been cutting the Dark Shadow Hunter's throat. "I hate him," she said suddenly. "Sebastian, what he's done to them, it's worse than murder. They're not even people anymore. When they die, they can't be buried in the Silent City, and no one will mourn for them. They've already been mourned for. If I loved someone and they were turned like this, I'd be happy if they were dead." She was breathing hard. No one said anything. Finally, Jace looked up at the sky, gold eyes gleaming in his dirt-smudged face. "We better get moving. The sun's going down, and besides, someone might have heard us." They stripped the gear from the bodies silently and quickly. There was something sickening about the work, something that hadn't seemed quite so horrible when Simon had described the strategy, but now seemed very horrible. She had killed. Demons and Forsaken. She would have killed Sebastian if she had been able to do it without harming Jace. But there was something grim and butcher-like about stripping the clothes from the dead bodies of Shadowhunters, even those marked with the runes of death and hell. She couldn't stop herself from looking at the face of one of the dead Shadowhunters, a man with brown hair, and wondering if he could be Julian's father. She put on the gear jacket and trousers of the smaller of the women, but they were still too big. Some quick work with her knife shortened the sleeves and hems, and her weapons belt held the pants up. There wasn't much Alec could do. He wound up with the largest of the Shadowhunter's jackets and it bolt on him. Simon's sleeves were too short and tight. He cut the seams at the shoulders to allow himself more movement. Jace and Isabel both managed to wind up with clothes that fit them, though Isabel's was spotted with drying blood. Jace managed to look handsome in the dark red, which was nothing short of annoying. They hid the bodies behind the rock cairn and started their way back up the hill. Jace had been right. The sun was going down, bathing the realm in the colors of fire and blood. They fell into step with one another as they drew closer and closer to the great silhouette of the Dark Guard. The upward slope suddenly leveled out, and they were there, on a plateau in front of the fortress. It was like looking at one photo negative overlapping another. Clary could see in her mind's eye the guard as it was in her world, the hill covered in trees and greenery, the gardens surrounding the keep, the glow of witchlight illuminating the whole place, the sun shining down on it during the day and the stars at night. Here, the top of the hill was barren and swept with wind, cold enough to cut through the material of Clary's stolen jacket. The horizon was a red line like a slit throat. Everything was bathed in that bloody light, from the crowd of the Indarkand who milled around the plateau, to the Dark Guard itself. Now that they were close, they could see the wall that surrounded it, and the sturdy gates. "You better pull your hood up," Jay said from behind her, taking hold of the item in question and drawing it up over her head. "Your hair's recognizable." "To the Indarkand," said Simon, who looked incredibly strange to Clary in his red gear. She had never imagined Simon in gear. "To Sebastian," Jay said shortly, and drew his own hood up. They had taken their weapons out. Isabel's whip gleamed in the red light, and Alec's bow was in his hands. Jace was looking toward the Dark Guard. Clary almost expected him to say something, to make a speech, to mark the occasion. He didn't. She could see the sharp angle of his cheekbones under the hood of the gear, the tight set of his jaw. He was ready. They all were. "We go to the gates," he said, and moved forward. Clary felt cold all over, battle coldness keeping her spine straight, her breath even. The dirt here was different, she noticed almost distantly. Unlike the rest of the sand of the desert world, it had been churned by the passage of feet. A red-clad warrior passed her then, a brown-skinned man, tall and muscular. He paid no attention to them. He appeared to be walking a beat,
as were several of the rest of the Indarkand, a sort of assigned path back and forth. A white woman with graying hair was a few feet behind them. Clary felt her muscles tighten. Armitis? But as she passed closer, it was clear that her face was not familiar. Clary thought she felt the woman's eyes on them just the same, and was relieved when they passed out of her sight. The guard was looming up in front of them now, the gates massive and made of iron. They were carved with a pattern of a hand holding a weapon, an orb-tipped skeptron. It was clear the gates had been subjected to years of desecration. Their surfaces were chipped and scarred, splashed here and there with ichor and what looked disturbingly like dried human blood. Clary stepped up to place her steely against the gates, ready with an open rune already in her hand, but the gates swung wide at her touch. She cast a surprised look back at the others. Jace was chewing his lip. She raised a questioning eyebrow at him, but he only shrugged as if to say, "We go forward, what else can we do?" They went. Past the gates was a bridge over a narrow ravine. Darkness roiled at the bottom of the chasm, thicker than fog or smoke. Isabel crossed first with her whip, and Alec took up the rear, facing behind them with his bow and arrow. As they went over the bridge in single file, Clary chanced a glance downward into the crevasse, and nearly flinched back. The darkness had limbs long and hooked like spiders' legs, and what looked like gleaming yellow eyes. "Don't look," Jay said in a low voice, and Clary snapped her eyes back to Isabel's whip, gold and gleaming ahead of them. It lit the darkness so that when they arrived at the front doors of the keep, Jace was able to find the latch easily and to swing the door open. It opened on darkness. They all looked at one another, a brief paralysis none of them could break. Clary found she was staring at the others, trying to memorize them. Simon's brown eyes, the curve of Jace's collarbone under the red jacket, the arch of Alec's eyebrow, Isabel's worried frown. "Stop," she told herself. "This isn't the end, you'll see them again." She glanced behind her. Past the bridge were the gates wide open, and past that were the Indarkans standing motionless. Clary had the sense they were watching too, everything caught in stillness in this one breathless moment before the fall. "Now." She stepped forward into the darkness. She heard Jay say her name very low, almost a whisper, and then she was over the threshold. And light was all around her, blinding in its suddenness. She heard the murmur of the others as they took their places at her side, and then the cold rush of air as the door slammed shut behind them. She raised her eyes. They were standing in an enormous entryway, the size of the inside of the Accords Hall. A massive, double-spiral stone staircase led upward, twisting and winding, two sets of stairs that interwove with each other but never met. Each was lined on either side by a stone balustrade, and Sebastian was leaning against one of the near balustrades, smiling down at them. It was a positively feral smile, delighted and anticipatory. He wore spotless scarlet gear, and his hair shone like iron. He shook his head. "Clary, Clary," he said, "I really thought you were much smarter than this." Clary cleared her throat. It felt clotted from dust and from fear. Her skin was buzzing as if she'd swallowed adrenaline. "Smarter than what?" she said, and nearly winced at the echo of her own voice, bouncing off the bare stone walls. There were no tapestries, no paintings, nothing to soften the harshness. Though she didn't know what else she would have expected from a demon world. Of course there was no art. "We're here," she said. "Inside your fortress, there are five of us and one of you." "Oh, right," he said. "Am I supposed to look surprised?" He twisted his face up into a mocking grimace of false astonishment that made Clary's gut twist. "Who could believe it?" he said mockingly. "I mean, never mind that obviously I found out from the Queen that you'd come here, but since you've arrived, you've set an enormous fire. Try to steal a demon-protected artifact. I mean, you've done everything other than put up an enormous flashing arrow pointing directly to your location." He sighed. "I've always known most of you were terribly stupid. Even Jace, well, you're pretty but not too bright, are you?"
Maybe if Valentine had had a few more years with you, but no, probably not even then. The Herondales have always been a family more prized for their jawlines than their intelligence. As for the Lightwoods, well, the less said the better. Generations of idiots. But Clary... You forgot me, Simon said. Sebastian dragged his gaze over to Simon as if he were distasteful. You do keep turning up like a bad penny, he said. Tedious little vampire. I killed the one who made you. Did you know that? I thought vampires were supposed to feel that sort of thing, but you seem indifferent. Terribly callous. Clary felt Simon stiffen minutely beside her, remembered him in the cave doubling over as if he were in pain, saying he felt as if someone had stuck a knife in his chest. Raphael, Simon whispered. Beside him, Alec had paled markedly. What about the others? He demanded in a rough voice. Magnus, Luke. Our mother, Clary said. Surely even you wouldn't hurt her. Sebastian's smirk turned brittle. She's not my mother, he said, and then shrugged with a sort of exaggerated exasperation. She's alive, he said. As for the warlock and the werewolf, I couldn't say. I haven't checked on them in a while. The warlock wasn't looking so well the last time I saw him, he added. I don't think this dimension's been good for him. He might be dead by now, but you really can't expect me to have seen that. Alec lifted his bow in a single swift motion. Foresee this, he said, and let an arrow fly. It shot straight toward Sebastian, who moved like lightning, plucking the arrow out of the air, fingers closing around it as it vibrated in his grasp. Clary heard Isabel's sudden intake of breath, felt the rush of blood and dread in her own veins. Sebastian pointed the sharp end of the arrow toward Alec as if he were a teacher wielding a ruler, and made a clucking noise of disapproval. Naughty, he said. Try to harm me in my own stronghold, will you, at the heart of my power? As I said, you're a fool. You are all fools. He made a sudden gesture, a twist of the wrist, and the arrow snapped, the sound like a gunshot. The double doors at both ends of the entryway flew open and demons poured in. Clary had expected it and braced herself, but there was no real bracing oneself for something like this. She had seen demons, quantities of them, and yet as the flood poured in from both sides, spider creatures with fat, poisonous bodies, skinless humanoid monsters dripping blood, things with talons and teeth and claws, massive praying mantises with jaws that dropped open as if unhinged. Her skin felt as if it wanted to crawl away from her body. She forced herself still, her hand on his forearm, and looked up at her brother. He met her gaze with his own dark one, and she remembered the boy in her vision, the one with green eyes like hers. She saw a furrow appear between his eyes. He raised his hand, snapped his fingers. Stop, he said. The demons froze, mid-motion, on either side of Clary and the others. She could hear Jace's harsh breathing, felt him press his fingers against the hand she was holding behind her back. A silent signal. The others were rigid, surrounding her. My sister, Sebastian said. Don't hurt her. Bring her to me, here. Kill the others. He narrowed his eyes at Jace. If you can. The demons surged forward. Isabel's necklace pulsed like a strobe light, sending out blazing tongues of red and gold, and in the fiery light, Clary saw the others turn to hold the demons off. It was her chance. She spun around and darted toward the wall, feeling the agility rune on her arm burn as she launched herself up, caught at the rough stone with her left hand, and swung forward, slamming the tip of her steely into the granite as if it were an axe going into tree bark. She felt the stone shudder. Small fissures appeared, but she clung on grimly, dragging her steely along the wall surface, swift and slashing. She felt the grind and drag of it distantly. Everything seemed to have receded, even the screech and crash of fighting behind her, the stink and howl of demons. She could only feel the power of the familiar runes echoing through her as she drew and drew and drew. Something seized her ankle and yanked. A bolt of pain shot up her leg. She glanced down and saw a ropey tentacle wrapped around her boot, dragging her down. It was attached to a demon that looked like a massive, molting parrot with tentacles exploding out from where its wings should have been. She clung on harder to the wall, whipping her steely back and forth, the rock shivering as the black lines ate into the stone. The pressure on her ankle increased. With a cry, Clary let go, her steely falling as she tumbled, hitting the ground hard. She gasped and rolled to the side just as an arrow flew past her head and sank deep into the grasping demon's flesh. She whipped her head up and saw Alec, reaching back for another arrow, just as the runes on the wall behind her blazed up like a map of heavenly fire. Jace was beside Alec, his sword in his hand, his eyes fixed on Clary. She nodded minutely. Do it. The demon that had been holding her roared. The tentacle loosed its grasp, and Clary staggered up and to her feet. She hadn't been able to draw a rectangular doorway, so the entrance scrawled on the wall was blazing in a ragged circle, like the opening to a tunnel. Within the blaze, she could see the shimmer of the portal. It rippled like silver water. Jace hurtled by her and threw himself into it. She caught a brief glimpse of what was beyond, the blasted Accords Hall, the statue of Jonathan Shadowhunter, before she flung herself forward, pressing her hand to the portal, keeping it open so that Sebastian couldn't close it. Jace needed only a few seconds. She could hear Sebastian behind her screaming in a language she didn't know. The stench of demons was all around. She heard a hiss and a rattle and turned to see a ravenous scuttling towards her, its scorpion tail raised. She flinched back just as it fell apart in two pieces, Isabel's metal whip scissoring down to slice it in half. Stinking ichor flooded across the floor. Simon grabbed Clary and dragged her back just as the portal swelled with a sudden, incredible light and Jace came through it. Clary sucked in a breath. Never had Jace looked so much like an avenging angel, hurtling through cloud and fire. His bright hair seemed to burn as he landed lightly and raised the weapon he was holding in his hand. It was Jonathan Shadowhunter's Skeptron. The orb at the center was shining. Through the portal behind Jace, just before it closed, Clary could see the dark shapes of flying demons, heard their shrieks of disappointment and rage as they arrived to find the weapon gone and the thief nowhere to be seen. As Jace raised the Skeptron, the demons around them began to scuttle backward. Sebastian was leaning over the balustrade, his hands clenched on it, dead white. He was staring at Jace. Jonathan, he said, and his voice rose and carried. Jonathan, I forbid. Jace thrust the Skeptron skyward, and the orb burst into flame. It was a brilliant, contained, icy flame, more light than heat, but a piercing light that shot through the whole room, limning everything in brilliance. Clary saw the demons turn to flaming silhouettes before they shuddered and exploded into ash. The ones closest to Jace crumbled first, but the light ran through all of them like a fissure opening in the earth, and one by one, they shrieked and dissolved, leaving a thick layer of grey-black ash on the floor. The light intensified, burning brighter until Clary closed her eyes, still seeing the burst of last brilliance through her eyelids. When she opened them again, the entryway was almost empty. Only she and her companions remained. The demons were gone, and Sebastian was there, still, standing pale and shocked on the stairway. No, he ground out through clenched teeth. Jace was still standing with the Skeptron in his hand. The orb had turned black and dead, like a light bulb that had burned out. He looked up at Sebastian, his chest rising and falling fast. You thought we didn't know you were expecting us, he said, but we were counting on it. He took a step forward. I know you, he said, still breathlessly, his hair wild and his golden eyes blazing. You took me over, took control of me, forced me to do whatever you wanted, but I learned from you. You were in my head, and I remember. I remember how you think, how you plan, I remember all of it. I knew you'd underestimate us, think we didn't guess it was a trap. Think we wouldn't have planned for that. You forget I know you, down to the last corner of your arrogant little mind, I know you. Shut up, Sebastian hissed. He pointed at them with a shaking hand. You will pay in blood for this, he said, and then he turned and ran up the steps, vanishing so quickly that even Alec's arrow winging after him couldn't catch him up. It hit the curve of the staircase instead and snapped on impact with the stone, then fell to the ground in two neat pieces. Jace, Clary said. She touched his arm. He seemed frozen in place. Jace, when he says we'll pay in blood, he doesn't mean our blood. He means theirs. Luke and Magnus and Mom. We have to go find them. I agree. Alec had lowered his bow. His red gear jacket had been torn from him in the fight, and the bracer on his arm was stained with blood. Each staircase leads to a different level. We're going to have to split up. Jace, Clary, you take the east staircase. The rest of us will take the other. No one protested. Clary knew Jace would never have agreed to split off from her, and neither would Alec have left his sister, or Isabel and Simon have left each other. If they had to separate, this was the only way to do it. Jace, Alec said again, and this time the word seemed to snap Jace out of his fugue state. He tossed the dead Skeptron aside, let it clatter to the ground, and looked up with a nod. Right, he said, and the door behind them burst open. Dark shadow hunters in red gear began to pour into the room. Jace seized Clary's wrist and they ran, Alec and the others pounding along beside them until they reached the stairway and broke apart. Clary thought she heard Simon say her name as she and Jace lunged for the east staircase. She turned around to look for him, but he was gone. The room was full of the Indarkand, several of them raising weapons, crossbows, even slingshots, to take aim. She ducked her head and continued to run. Gia Penhallow stood on the balcony of the guard and looked down over the city of Alicante. The balcony was rarely used. There had been a time when the consul had often spoken to the populace from this spot high above them, but the habit had fallen out of favor in the 19th century, when Consul Fairchild had decided that the action smacked too much of the behavior of a pope or king. Twilight had come, and the lights of Alicante had begun to burn. Witch light in the windows of every house and storefront, witch light illuminating the statue in Angel Square, witch light pouring from the Basilius. Gia took a deep breath, holding the note from Maya Roberts that spoke of hope in her left hand as she readied herself. The demon towers flared up blue, and Gia began to speak. Her voice echoed from tower to tower, dispersing itself through the city. She could see people stopped in the street, their heads craned back to look at the demon towers, people arrested on the doorsteps of their houses, listening as her words rolled over them like a tide. Nephilim, she said. Children of the angel, warriors, tonight we ready ourselves. For tonight, Sebastian Morgenstern will bring his forces against us. The wind coming across the hills that surrounded Alicante was icy. Gia shivered. Sebastian Morgenstern is trying to destroy what we are, she said. He will bring against us warriors who wear our own faces but are not Nephilim. We cannot hesitate. When we face them, when we look at an Indarkand, we cannot see brother or mother or sister or wife, but a creature in torment. A human from whom all humanity has been stripped. We are what we are, because our will is free. We are free to choose. We choose to stand and fight. We choose to defeat Sebastian's forces. They have the darkness. We have the strength of the angel. Fire tests gold. In this fire, we will be tested, and we will shine out. You know the protocol. You know what to do. Go forth, children of the angel. Go forth and light the lights of war. 22. The Ashes of Our Fathers. The sound of a sudden wailing siren split the air, and Emma started up in bed, scattering the papers to the floor. Her heart was pounding. Through the open window of her bedroom, she could see the demon towers flashing golden red, the colors of war. She staggered to her feet, reaching for her gear, which was on a peg by the bed. She had just slid into it and was bending down to tie up her boots when the door to her room burst open. It was Julian. He skidded halfway inside before catching himself. He stared at the papers on the floor and then at her.
Emma, didn't you hear the announcement?
I was napping. She clipped out the words as she attached the harness that held Cortana to her back, then slipped the blade into the scabbard.
The city's under attack, he said. We have to get to the Accords Hall. They're going to lock us inside, all the kids. It's the safest place in the city.
I won't go, Emma said.
Julian stared at her. He was wearing jeans and a gear jacket and sneakers. There was a short sword stuck through his belt. His soft brown curls were wild and unbrushed.
What do you mean?
I don't want to hide in the Accords Hall. I want to fight. Jules pushed his hands through his tangled hair.
If you fight, I fight, he said.
And that means nobody carries Tabby to the Accords Hall, and nobody protects Libby or Ty or Drew.
What about Helen and Aline? Emma demanded. The Penhallows.
Helen's waiting for us. All the Penhallows are up at the guard, Aline included. There's no one home but Helen and us, said Julian, holding out a hand for Emma. Helen can't protect us all on her own and carry the baby too. She's only one person.
He looked at her, and she could see the fear in his eyes, the fear he was usually so careful to shield from the younger children.
Emma, he said, you're the best fighter of all of us. You're not just my friend, and I'm not just their older brother. I'm their father, or the closest thing to it, and they need me, and I need you.
The hand he was holding out was shaking. His sea-colored eyes were huge in his pale face. He didn't look like anyone's father.
Please, Emma.
Slowly, Emma reached out and took his hand, wrapping her fingers around his. She saw him let out a minute breath of relief and felt her chest tighten. Behind him, through the open door, she could glimpse them. Tavi and Drew, Livia and Tiberius. Her responsibility.
Let's go, she said.
At the top of the stairs, Jace released Clary's hand. She clutched at the balustrade, trying not to cough, though her lungs felt like they wanted to tear their way out of her chest. He looked at her. What's wrong? But then he stiffened. Audible behind them was the sound of racing feet. The Undarkened were on their heels. Come on, Jace said, and started to run again. Clary forced herself after him. Jace seemed to know where he was going, unerringly. She supposed he was using the map of the guard in Alicante that he had in his head, burrowing in toward the center of the keep. They turned into a long corridor. Halfway down it, Jace stopped in front of a set of metal doors. They were slashed with unfamiliar runes. Clary would have expected death runes, something that spoke of hell and darkness. But these were runes of grieving and sorrow for a world destroyed. Who had etched them here, she wondered, and in what excess of mourning? She had seen runes of grief before. Shadowhunters wore them like badges when someone they loved had died, though they did nothing to ease suffering. But there was a difference between grief for a person and grief for a world. Jace ducked his head, kissed her hard and fast on the mouth. Are you ready? She nodded, and he swung the door open and stepped inside. She followed. The room beyond was as large as the council room in Alicante's guard, if not larger. The ceiling rose high above them, though instead of rows of seats, a wide bare marble floor stretched toward a dais at the end of the room. Behind the dais were two massive separate windows. Sunset light poured through each of them, though one sunset was the color of gold, and the other was the color of blood. In the bloody golden light, Sebastian knelt in the center of the room. He was etching runes into the floor, a circle of dark connecting sigils. Realizing what he was doing, Clary started toward him, and then lurched back with a scream as a massive gray shape loomed up in front of her. It looked like an enormous maggot. The only gap in its slick gray body was its mouth full of jagged teeth. Clary recognized it. She'd seen one before in Alicante, rolling its slippery body over a pile of blood and glass and icing sugar. A behemoth demon. She reached for her dagger, but Jace was already leaping, sword in hand. He flew through the air and landed on the back of the demon, stabbing down through its eyeless head. Clary backed away as the behemoth demon thrashed, spraying stinging ichor, a loud, ululating wail coming from its open throat. Jace clung to its back, ichor spraying up over him as he brought the sword down, and down, and down again, until the demon, with a gurgling scream, collapsed to the ground with a thud. Jace wrote it down, knees clamped to its sides, until the last moment. He rolled off and hit the ground standing. For a moment there was silence. Jace looked around the room, as if he expected another demon to lunge out at them from the shadows. But there was nothing. Only Sebastian, who had risen to his feet in the center of his now completed circle of runes. He began to clap slowly.
"Lovely work," he said. "Really excellent demon dispatching. I bet Dad would have given you a gold star. Now, shall we dispense with the pleasantries? You recognize where we are, don't you?"
Jace's eyes moved around the room, and Clary followed his gaze. The light outside the windows had dimmed slightly, and she could see the dais more clearly. On it sat two immense, well, the only word for them was thrones. They were ivory and gold, with gold steps leading up to them. Each had a curved back, embossed with a single key.
"I am he that liveth and was dead," said Sebastian. "And behold, I am alive forevermore, and have the keys of hell and of death."
He made a sweeping gesture toward the two chairs, and Clary realized with a sudden jolt that there was someone kneeling beside the leftmost chair, a dark shadow hunter in red gear, a woman on her knees, her hands clasped in front of her.
"These are the keys, made over in the shapes of thrones, and given to me by the demons who rule this world, Lilith and Asmodeus."
His dark eyes moved to Clary, and she felt his gaze like cold fingers walking up her spine. "I don't know why you're showing me this," she said. "What do you expect, admiration? You won't get it. You can threaten me if you want. You know I don't care. You can't threaten Jace. He has the fire of heaven in his veins. You can't hurt him."
"Can't I?" he said. "Who knows how much of heaven's fire he still has in his veins, after that fireworks display he put on the other night. That demon got to you, didn't she, brother? I knew you could never quite bear the knowledge of it, that you had killed your own kind."
"You forced me to murder," Jace said. "It wasn't my hand holding the knife that killed Sister Magdalena, it was yours."
"If you like."
Sebastian's smile turned cold.
"Regardless, there are others I can threaten. Amatis, rise, and bring Jocelyn here."
Clary felt tiny daggers of ice shoot through her veins. She tried to keep her face from showing any expression as the woman kneeling by the throne rose. It was indeed Amatis, with her disconcerting luke-blue eyes. She smiled.
"With pleasure," she said,
and stalked out of the room, the hem of her long red coat sweeping behind her. Jay stepped forward with an inarticulate growl and stopped in his tracks, several feet from Sebastian. He put his hands out, but they seemed to collide with something translucent, an invisible wall. Sebastian snorted.
"As if I'd let you get near me, you, with that fire burning in you. Once was enough, thank you."
"So you know I can kill you," Jace said, facing him,
and Clary couldn't help but think how alike they were and how different. Like ice and fire. Sebastian all white and black, and Jace burning up with red and gold.
"You can't hide in there forever. You'll starve."
Sebastian made a quick gesture with his fingers, the way Clary had seen Magnus gesture when he was casting a spell, and Jace flew up and back and slammed into the wall behind them. Her breath caught in a gasp as she spun to see him crumple to the ground, a bloody gash across the side of his head. Sebastian hummed in delight and lowered his hand.
"Don't worry," he said conversationally,
and turned his gaze back to Clary.
"He'll be fine. Eventually. If I don't change my mind about what to do with him. I'm sure you understand, now that you've seen what I can do."
Clary held herself still. She knew how important it was to keep her face blank, not to look at Jace in panic, not to show Sebastian her anger or her fear. Deep down in her heart, she knew what he wanted, better than anyone else. She knew what he was like, and that was the best weapon she had.
Well, maybe the second best.
"I've always known you had power," she said,
deliberately not looking toward Jace, deliberately not analyzing his motionlessness, the thick trickle of blood that was making its way down the side of his face. This was always going to happen. It was always going to be her facing Sebastian with no one else, not even Jace, by her side. "Power," he echoed, as if it were an insult. "Is that what you call it?" "Here I have more than power, Clary. Here, in this keep, I can shape what is real." He had begun to pace inside the circle he had drawn, his hands looped casually behind his back, like a professor delivering a lecture. "This world is connected only by the thinnest threads to the one where we were born. The road through Fairy is one such thread. These windows are another. Step through that one." He pointed to the window on the right, through which Clary could see dark blue twilight sky and stars. "And you will return to Idris. But it's not that simple." He regarded the stars through the window. "I came to this world because it was a place to hide. And then I began to realize. I am sure our father quoted these words to you many times." He spoke to Jace, as if Jace could hear him. "But it is better to rule in hell than serve in heaven. And here I rule. I have my dark ones and my demons. I have my keep and citadel. And when the borders of this world are sealed, everything here will be my weapon. Rocks, dead trees, the ground itself will come to my hand and wield its power for me. And the great ones, the old demons, will look down on my work, and they will reward me. They will raise me up in glory, and I will rule the abysses between worlds and the spaces between all the stars. And he shall rule them with a rod of iron," said Clary, remembering Alec's words in the Accords Hall. "And I will give him the morning star." Sebastian whirled on her, his eyes bright. "Yes," he said. "Yes, very good. You are understanding now. I thought I wanted our world, to bring it down in blood. But I want more than that. I want the legacy of the Morgenstern name."
"You want to be the devil?" Clary said, half baffled and half terrified. "You want to rule hell?" She spread her hands out. "Go ahead then," she said. "None of us will stop you. Let us go home. Promise you'll leave our world alone and you can have hell."
"Alas," said Sebastian, "for I have discovered one other thing that perhaps sets me apart from Lucifer. I do not want to rule alone." He extended his arm, an elegant gesture, and indicated the two great thrones on the dais. "One of those is for me, and the other is for you."
The streets of Alicante turned and twisted back in on themselves like the currents of a sea. If Emma hadn't been following Helen, who was carrying a witchlight in one hand and her crossbow in the other, she would have been hopelessly lost. The last of the sun was vanishing from the sky and the streets were dark. Julian was carrying Tavi, the baby's arms locked around his neck. Emma held Drew by the hand and the twins clung together in silence. Drew wasn't fast and kept stumbling. She fell several times and Emma had to drag her to her feet. Jules called out to Emma to be careful, and she was trying to be careful. She couldn't imagine how Julian did it, holding Tavi so carefully, murmuring so reassuringly that the little boy didn't even cry. Drew was sobbing silently. Emma brushed the tears off the younger girl's cheeks as she helped her up for the fourth time, murmuring nonsense comforting words the way her mother once had to her when she had been a child and had fallen. She had never missed her parents more agonizingly than she did now. It felt like a knife under her ribs. "Drew," she began, and the sky lit up red. The demon towers had flamed to the color of pure scarlet, all the gold of warning gone. "The city walls are broken," Helen said, staring up at the guard. Emma knew she was thinking about Aline. The red glow of the towers turned her pale hair the color of blood. "Come on, quickly." Emma wasn't sure if they could go any more quickly. She got a tighter hold of Drusilla's wrist and yanked the little girl nearly off her feet, muttering apologies as she went. The twins, hand in hand, were faster, even as they raced up a jagged set of stairs towards Angel Square, led by Helen.
They were almost at the top step when Julian gasped out, "Helen, behind us!" And Emma spun around to see a fairy knight in white armor approaching the foot of the stairs. He carried a bow made from a curved branch, and his hair was long and bark-colored. For a moment, his eyes met Helen's. The expression on his face changed, and Emma couldn't help wondering if he recognized the fair folk in her blood. And then Helen raised her right arm and shot her crossbow directly at him. He whirled away. The bolt hit the wall behind him. The fairy smirked and leaped up the first step, then the second, and screamed. Emma watched in shock as his legs buckled under him. He fell and howled as his skin came into contact with the edge of the step. For the first time, Emma noticed that corkscrews, nails, and other hunks of cold forged iron had been hammered into the step edges. The fairy warrior reeled back, and Helen shot again. The bolt went through his armor and into his chest. He crumpled. "They fairy-proofed," Emma said, remembering looking out the window at the Penhallows with Ty and Helen. "All the metal, the iron." She pointed at a nearby building where a long row of scissors hung from cords connected to the edge of the roof. "That's what the guards were doing." Suddenly, Drew shrieked. Another figure raced up the street, a second fairy knight, this one a woman with an armor of pale green carrying a shield of overlapping carved leaves. Emma whipped a knife from her belt and threw it. Instinctively, the fairy raised her shield to block the knife, which sailed past her head and severed the cord holding a pair of scissors to the roof above. The scissors fell, blade first, and plunged between the fairy woman's shoulders. She fell to the ground with a shriek, her body spasming. "Good job, Emma," said Helen in a hard voice. "Come on, all of you." She broke off with a cry as three Endarkened surged from a side street. They wore the red gear that had appeared so often in Emma's nightmares, dyed even redder by the light from the demon towers. The children were silent as ghosts. Helen raised her crossbow and shot a bolt. It struck one of the Endarkened in the shoulder, and he spun away, staggering but not falling. She fumbled to reload the bow. Julian struggled to hold Tavi while reaching for the blade at his side. Emma put her hand on Cortana. A spinning circle of light hurtled through the air and buried itself in the throat of the first Endarkened, blood spattering the wall behind him. He clawed at his throat once and fell. Two more circles flew, one after the other, and sliced into the chests of the other Dark Nephilim. They crumpled silently, more blood spreading in a pool along the cobblestones. Emma whirled and looked up. Someone stood at the top of the stairs, a young shadow hunter with dark hair, a gleaming chakram still in his right hand. Several others were hooked to his weapons belt. In the red light of the demon towers, he seemed to glow, a tall, thin figure in dark gear against the darker black of night, the Accords Hall rising like a pale moon behind him. "Brother Zachariah," said Helen in amazement.
"What's going on?" Magnus asked hoarsely. He was no longer able to sit up, and was lying half-propped on his elbows, on the floor of the cell. Luke was standing with his face pressed to the arrow-slit window. His shoulders were tense, and he'd barely moved since the first screams and shouting had begun. "Light," Luke said finally. "There's some kind of light pouring out of the keep. It's burning the mist away. I can see the plateau down below, and some of the Endarkened running around. I just don't know what's caused it." Magnus laughed under his breath and tasted metal in his mouth. "Come on. Who do you think?" Luke looked at him. "The Clave?" "The Clave," Magnus said. "I hate to break it to you, but they don't care enough about us to come here." He tipped his head back. He felt worse than he could remember ever feeling. Well, maybe not ever. There had been that incident with the rats in the quicksand around the turn of the century. "Your daughter, though," he said. "She does." Luke looked horrified. "Clary? No, she couldn't be here." "Isn't she always where she isn't supposed to be?" Magnus said in a reasonable voice. At least he thought he sounded reasonable. It was hard to tell when he felt so dizzy. "And the rest of them. Her constant companions. My..." The door burst open. Magnus tried to sit up, couldn't, and fell back onto his elbows. He felt a dull sense of annoyance. If Sebastian had come to kill them, he'd rather die on his feet than his elbows. He heard voices, Luke exclaiming, and then others, and then a face swam into view, hovering over his, eyes like stars in a pale sky. Magnus exhaled. For a moment he no longer felt ill, or afraid of dying, or even angry or bitter. Relief washed over him, as profound as sorrow, and he reached up to brush the cheek of the boy leaning over him with the back of his bruised knuckles. Alec's eyes were huge and blue and full of anguish.
"Oh, my Alec," he said. "You've been so sad. I didn't know."
As they forged their way farther into the center of the city, the crowd thickened. More Nephilim, more Indarkand, more fairy warriors. Though the fairies moved sluggishly, painfully, many of them weakened by contact with the iron, steel, rowan wood, and salt that had been liberally deployed around the city as protection against them. The might of fairy soldiers was legendary, but Emma saw many of them, who might otherwise have been victorious, fall beneath the flashing swords of the Nephilim, their blood running across the white flagstones of Angel Square. The Indarkand, however, were not weakened. They seemed unconcerned with the troubles of their fairy companions, hacking and slashing their way through the Nephilim jamming Angel Square. Julian had Tavi zipped into his jacket. The little boy was screaming now, his cries lost among the shrieks of battle. "We have to stop," Julian shouted. "We're going to be separated. Helen!" Helen was pale and ill-looking. The closer they got to the Hall of Accords now looming above them, the thicker the clusters of fairy protection spells were. Even Helen with her partial heritage was beginning to feel it. It was Brother Zachariah, just Zachariah now, Emma reminded herself, just a shadow hunter like they were, in the end, who moved to fashion them all into a line. Blackthorns and Carstairs, everyone hand in hand. Emma hung on to Julian's belt since his other hand was supporting Tavi. Even Ty was forced to hold hands with Drusilla, though he scowled at her when he did, bringing fresh tears to her eyes. They made their way toward the hall. Clinging together, Zachariah in front of them. He was out of throwing blades and had taken out a long-bladed spear. He swept the crowd with it as they went, efficiently and icily hacking a pathway through the Indarkand. Emma burned to seize Cortana out of its scabbard, to run forward and stab and slash at the enemies who had murdered her parents, who had tortured and turned Julian's father, who had taken Mark away from them. But that would have meant letting go of Julian and Livy, and that she would not do. She owed the Blackthorns too much, Jules especially, Jules who had kept her alive, who had brought her Cortana when she had thought she would die of grief. Finally, they stumbled up the front steps of the hall behind Helen and Zachariah and reached the massive double doors of the entryway. There was a guard on either side, one holding an enormous wooden bar. Emma recognized one of them as the woman with the coy tattoo who sometimes spoke out in meetings, Diana Rayburn.
"We're about to shut the doors," said the one holding the bar. "You two, you're going to have to leave them here. Only children are allowed inside."
"Helen?" said Drew in a trembling little voice. The line broke into pieces then, with the Blackthorn children swarming Helen, Julian standing a little aside, his face blank and ashen, his free hand stroking Tavi's curls. "It's all right," Helen was saying in a choked voice. "This is the safest place in Alicante. Look, there's salt and grave dirt all up and down the steps to keep the fairies out."
"And cold iron under the flagstones," said Diana. The instructions of the spiral labyrinth were followed to the letter. At the mention of the spiral labyrinth, Zachariah took a sharp breath and knelt down, bringing his eyes on a level with Emma's.
"Emma Cordelia Carstairs," he said. He looked both very young and very old at the same time. There was blood at his throat where his faded rune stood out, but it wasn't his. He seemed to be searching her face, though for what she couldn't tell. "Stay with your Parabatai," he said finally, so quietly that no one else could hear them. "Sometimes it's braver not to fight. Protect them and save your vengeance for another day."
Emma felt her eyes widen. "But I don't have a Parabatai, and how did you..." One of the guards cried out and fell, a red fletched arrow in his chest. "Get inside," shouted Diana, seizing hold of the children and half throwing them into the hall. Emma felt herself caught and tossed inside. She spun to get one last look at Zachariah and Helen, but it was too late. The double doors had slammed shut after her, the massive wooden latch falling into place with a sound of echoing finality.
"No," Clary said, looking from the terrifying throne to Sebastian and back again.
"Blank your mind," she told herself.
Focus on Sebastian, on what's happening here, on what you can do to stop him. Don't think about Jace.
You must know I won't stay here. Maybe you'd rather rule hell than serve in heaven, but I don't want either. I just want to go home and live my life.
That isn't possible. I've already sealed the pathway that brought you here. No one can return through it. All that's left is this here. He gestured to the window. And in a short time, that will be sealed too. There will be no returning home, not for you. You belong here, with me.
Why? She whispered. Why me?
Because I love you, Sebastian said.
He looked uncomfortable, tense and strained, as if he were reaching for something he couldn't quite touch.
I don't want you hurt.
You don't? You have hurt me. You tried to...
It doesn't matter if I hurt you, he said.
Because you belong to me. I can do what I want with you.
But I don't want other people touching you, or owning you, or hurting you. I want you to be around, to admire me, and to see what I've done, what I've accomplished. That's love, isn't it?
No, Clary said, in a soft, sad voice. No, it isn't.
She took a step toward him, and her boot knocked against the invisible force field of his circle of runes. She could go no farther.
If you love someone, then you want them to love you back.
Sebastian's eyes narrowed.
Don't patronize me. I know what you think love is, Clarissa. I happen to think you're wrong.
You will ascend the throne, and you will reign beside me. You have a dark heart in you, and it is a darkness we share. When I am all there is in your world, when I am all that is left, you will love me back.
I don't understand. I can't imagine you would.
Sebastian smirked. You aren't exactly in possession of all the information. Let me guess. You know nothing of what's happened in Alicante since you departed.
A cold feeling began to spread in Clary's stomach.
We're in another dimension, she said. There's no way to know.
Not exactly, said Sebastian, and his voice was rich with delight, as if she had fallen into precisely the trap he had wanted. Look into the window above the eastern throne. Look, and see Alicante now. Clary looked. When she had come into the room, she had seen only what seemed like the starred night sky through the eastern window, but now, as she concentrated, the surface of the glass shimmered and rippled. She thought of the story of Snow White suddenly, the magic mirror, its surface shimmering and changing to reveal the outside world. She was looking at the inside of the Accords Hall. It was full of children. Shadowhunter children sat and stood and clung together. There were the Blackthorns, the children huddled tightly in a group. Julian, sitting with the baby on his lap. His free arm stretched out, as if he could encompass the rest of his siblings, could pull them all in and protect them. Emma sat close by him, her expression stony, her golden sword gleaming behind her shoulder. The scene resolved into Angel Square. All around the Hall of Accords was a boiling mass of Nephilim, and ranged against them were the Endarkened in their scarlet gear, bristling with weapons. And not just the Endarkened, but figures that Clary recognized with a sinking heart as fairy warriors. A tall fairy with hair of mixed blue and green strands was battling Aline Penhallow, who stood in front of her mother, her sword drawn as if ready to fight to the death. Across the square was Helen, trying to push her way through the crowd toward Aline, but the crush was too great. The fighting penned her back, but so did the bodies. Bodies of Nephilim warriors, fallen and dying. So many more in black gear than red. They were losing the battle. Losing it. Clary whirled on Sebastian as the scene began to fade.
What's happening?
It's over, he said. I requested that the Clave turn you over to me. They didn't. Admittedly, because you'd run off. But nevertheless, they were of no further use to me. My forces have invaded the city.
The Nephilim children are hiding in the Accords Hall, but when all the others are dead, the hall will be taken. Alicante will be mine. All of Idris will be mine. The Shadowhunters have lost the war, not that there was much of one. I really thought that they'd put up more of a fight.
That's hardly all the Shadowhunters that exist, Clary said. That was just who was in Alicante. There are still Nephilim scattered all over the world.
All the Shadowhunters you see there will drink from the Infernal Cup soon enough. Then they will be my servants, and I will send them out to find their brethren in the world. And those who remain will be turned or killed. I will slay the Iron Sisters and the Silent Brothers in their citadels of stone and silence. Inside of a month, the race of Jonathan Shadowhunter will be wiped from the world. And then, he smiled a terrible smile, and gestured toward the western window, which looked out on the dead and blasted world of Edom. You've seen what happens to a world without protectors, he gloated. Your world will die. Death on death, and blood in the streets. Clary thought of Magnus. I saw a city all of blood, with towers made of bone, and blood ran in the streets like water. You can't imagine, she said in a dead voice, that if you do this, if what you're telling me is going to happen does actually happen, that there is any chance I would sit on a throne beside you. I'd rather be tortured to death. Oh, I don't think it, he said breezily. That's why I've waited, you see, to give you a choice. All those fair folk who are my allies, all the Undarkened you see there, they wait on my orders. If I give the signal, they will stand down. Your world will be safe. You'll never be able to return there, of course. I'll seal the borders between this world and that, and never again will anyone, demon or human, travel between them. But it will be safe. A choice, Clary said. You said you were giving me a choice. Of course, he said. Rule beside me, and I will spare your world. Refuse, and I will give the order to annihilate it. Choose me, and you can save millions, billions of lives, my sister. You could save a whole world by damning a single soul, your own. So tell me, what is your decision?
Magnus, Alex said desperately, reaching to feel the Adamus chains, sunk deep into the floor, that connected to the manacles on the warlock's wrists.
Are you all right? Are you hurt?
Isabel and Simon were checking Luke for injuries. Isabel kept glancing back at Alec, her face anxious. Alec deliberately didn't meet her gaze, not wanting her to see the fear in his eyes. He touched the back of his hand to Magnus's face. Magnus looked sunken and sallow, his lips dry, ashy shadows beneath his eyes.
My Alec, Magnus had said. You've been so sad. I didn't know.
And then he had sunk back against the floor, as if the effort of speaking exhausted him.
Hold still, Alec said now,
and drew a seraph blade from his belt. He opened his mouth to name it and felt a sudden touch at his wrist. Magnus had wrapped his slender fingers around Alec's wrist.
Call it Raphael, Magnus said.
And when Alec looked at him in puzzlement, Magnus glanced toward the blade in Alec's hand. His eyes were half closed, and Alec remembered what Sebastian had said in the entryway to Simon.
I killed the one who made you.
Magnus's mouth quirked at the corner.
It is an angel's name, he said.
Alec nodded.
Raphael, he said softly.
And when the blade blazed up, he brought it down hard on the Adamus chain, which splintered under the touch of the knife. The chains fell away, and Alec, dropping the blade to the floor, reached forward to take Magnus by the shoulders and help him up. Magnus reached for Alec, but instead of rising to his feet, he pulled Alec against him, his hand sliding up Alec's back to knot in his hair. Magnus pulled Alec down and against him and kissed him, hard and awkward and determined. and Alec froze for a moment and then abandoned himself to it, to kissing Magnus. Something he thought he'd never get to do again. Alec ran his hands up Magnus's shoulders to the sides of his neck and cupped his hands there, holding Magnus in place while he kissed him thoroughly, breathless. Finally, Magnus drew back. His eyes were shining. He let his head fall onto Alec's shoulder, arms encircling him, keeping them tightly together.
"Alec," he began softly.
"Yes," Alec said, desperate to know what Magnus wanted to ask him.
"Are you being chased?"
Some of the Andokind are looking for us," Alec said carefully.
"Pity," Magnus said, closing his eyes again. "It would be nice if you could just lie down with me here, just for a little while."
"Well, you can't," said Isabel, not unkindly. "We have to get out of here. The Andokin will be here any second, and we've got what we came for."
"Jocelyn."
Luke drew away from the wall, straightening up.
"You're forgetting Jocelyn."
Isabel opened her mouth, then closed it again.
"You're right," she said.
Her hand went to her weapons belt, and she unfastened a sword. Taking a step across the room, she handed it to Luke, then bent down to pick up Alec's still-burning Seraph blade. Luke took the sword and held it with the careless competence of someone who had handled blades all their life. Sometimes it was hard for Alec to remember that Luke had been a shadow hunter once, but he remembered now.
"Can you stand?" Alec said to Magnus gently,
and Magnus nodded and let Alec lift him to his feet. He lasted almost 10 seconds before his knees buckled and he collapsed forward, coughing.
"Magnus!" Alec exclaimed,
and threw himself down by the warlock's side. But Magnus waved him away and struggled up to his knees.
"You should go without me," he said,
in a voice made gravelly by hoarseness.
"I'll slow you down." "I don't understand."
Alec felt as if a vice were compressing his heart.
"What happened? What did he do to you?"
Magnus shook his head. It was Luke who answered. "This dimension is killing Magnus," he said, voice flat. "There's something about it, about his father, that's destroying him." Alec glanced at Magnus, but Magnus only shook his head again. Alec fought down an irrational burst of anger.
"Still withholding things, even now,"
and took a deep breath.
"The rest of you go find Jocelyn," he said. "I'll stay with Magnus. We'll head toward the center of the keep. When you find her, come looking for us there."
Isabel looked wretched.
"Alec, please, Izzy," said Alec,
and he saw Simon put his hand on Isabel's back and whisper something into her ear. She nodded, finally, and turned toward the door. Luke and Simon followed her, both pausing to look back at Alec before they went, but it was the image of Izzy that stuck in his mind, carrying her blazing seraph blade in front of her like a star.
"Here,"
he said to Magnus as gently as he could, and reached down to lift him up. Magnus stumbled to his feet, and Alec managed to get one of the warlock's long arms slung over his shoulder. Magnus was thinner than he had ever been. His shirt clung to his ribs, and the spaces under his cheekbones looked sunken. But there was still a lot of warlock to contend with, a lot of skinny arms and legs and long bony spine.
"Hold on to me," Alec said,
and Magnus gave him the sort of smile that made Alec feel like someone had taken an apple corer to his heart and tried to dig out the center.
"I always do, Alexander," he said. "I always do."
The baby had fallen asleep in Julian's lap. He was holding Tavi tightly, carefully, great dark hollows under his eyes. Livy and Ty were huddled together on one side of him, Drew curled against him on the other. Emma sat behind him, her back against his, giving him something to lean on to balance the weight of the baby. There were no free pillars to sit against, no bare space of wall. Dozens, hundreds of children were prisoned in the hall. Emma leaned her head back against Jules's. He smelled the way he always did, soap, sweat, and the tang of ocean, as if he carried it in his veins. It was comforting and not comforting in its familiarity.
"I hear something," she whispered.
"Do you?"
Julian's eyes flicked immediately to his brothers and sisters. Livy was half asleep, her chin propped on her hand. Drew was looking all over the room, her big blue-green eyes taking everything in.
Ty was tapping his finger against the marble floor, obsessively counting from 1 to 100 and backward again. He had kicked and screamed when Julian had tried to look at a welt on his arm where he had fallen. Jules had let it go and allowed Ty to go back to his counting and rocking. It soothed him to quietness, which was what mattered. "What do you hear?" Jules asked, and Emma's head fell back then as the sound rose, a sound like a great wind or the crackle of a massive bonfire. People started to move and cry out, looking up at the glass ceiling of the hall. Through it, clouds were visible, moving across the face of the moon, and then from the clouds burst a wild assortment of riders, riders of black horses whose hooves were flame, riders of massive black dogs with orange burning eyes. More modern forms of transport were mixed in as well, black carriages drawn by skeletal steeds, and motorcycles gleaming with chrome and bone and onyx. "The Wild Hunt," Jules whispered. The wind was a living thing, whipping the clouds into peaks and valleys that the horsemen hurtled up and down, their cries audible even over the gale, their hands bristling with weapons, swords and maces and spears and crossbows. The front doors of the hall began to shake and tremble. The wooden bar that had been placed across them exploded into splinters. The Nephilim stared toward the doors with terrified eyes. Emma heard the voice of one of the guards among the crowd speaking in a harsh whisper. "The Wild Hunt are chasing away our warriors outside the hall," she said. "The Andarkand are clearing away the iron and the grave dirt. They'll break down the doors if the guards don't get rid of them." "The raging host has come," said Ty, breaking off his counting briefly. "The gatherers of the dead." "But the council protected the city against fairies," Emma protested. "Why?" "They're not ordinary fairies," said Ty. "The salt, the grave dirt, the cold iron, it won't work on the Wild Hunt." Drew whipped round and looked up. "The Wild Hunt?" she said. "Does that mean Mark's here? Has he come to save us?" "Don't be a fool," Ty said witheringly. "Mark is with the huntsmen now, and the Wild Hunt want there to be battles. They come to gather the dead when it's all over, and the dead serve them." Drew screwed up her face in confusion. The doors of the hall were shuddering violently now, the hinges threatening to tear free of the walls. "But if Mark isn't coming to save us, then who will?" "No one," said Ty, and only the nervous tapping of his fingers on marble showed that the idea bothered him at all. "No one is coming to save us. We're going to die." Jocelyn flung herself once more against the door. Her shoulder was already bruised and bloody, her nails torn where she'd gouged at the lock. She had been hearing the sounds of fighting for a quarter of an hour now, the unmistakable sounds of running feet, of demons screaming. The knob of the door began to turn. She scrambled back and seized up the brick she'd managed to loosen from the wall. She couldn't kill Sebastian, she knew that much, but if she could hurt him, slow him. The door swung open, and the brick flew from her hand. The figure in the doorway ducked, the brick hit the wall, and Luke straightened up and looked at her in curiosity. "I hope when we're married that's not the way you greet me every day when I come home," he said. Jocelyn hurled herself at him. He was filthy and bloody and dusty, his shirt torn, a sword in his right hand, but his left arm came around her and held her close. "Luke," she said into his neck. And for a moment she thought she might shake apart from relief and happiness and delirium and fear, the way she'd shaken apart in his arms when she'd found out he'd been bitten. If only she'd known then, had realized then, that the way she loved him was the way you loved someone you wanted to spend your life with, everything would have been different. But then there would never have been Clary. She pulled back, looking up into his face, his blue eyes steady on hers. "Our daughter?" she asked. "She's here," he said, and stepped back so that she could see past him to where Isabel and Simon waited in the corridor, both looking very uncomfortable, as if seeing two adults embrace was about the worst thing you could glimpse, even in the demon realms. "Come with us. We're going to find her."
"It's not certain," Clary said desperately. "The Shadowhunters might not lose. They could rally."
Sebastian smiled. "That's a chance you could take," he said. "But listen, they have come to Alicante now, those who ride the winds between the worlds. They are drawn to places of slaughter. Can you see?"
He gestured toward the window that opened out onto Alicante. Through it, Clary could see the Hall of Accords under the moonlight, clouds moving restlessly to and fro in the background. And then the clouds resolved themselves and became something else. Something she had seen once before, with Jace, lying in the bottom of a boat in Venice. The Wild Hunt, racing across the sky, dark clothes and ragged warriors bristling with weapons, howling as their ghostly steeds pounded across the sky. "The Wild Hunt," she said, numb, and remembered Mark Blackthorne suddenly, the whip marks on his body, his broken eyes. "The Gatherers of the Dead," said Sebastian. "The Carrion Crows of Magic. They go where great slaughter is. A slaughter only you can prevent." Clary closed her eyes. She felt as if she were adrift, floating on dark water, seeing the lights of the shore recede and recede in the distance. Soon she would be alone on the ocean, the icy sky above her and 8 miles of empty darkness below. "Go and take the throne," he said. "If you do it, you can save them all." She looked at him. "How do I know you'll keep your word?" He shrugged. "I'd be a fool not to. You'd know immediately that I'd lied to you, and then you'd fight me, which I don't want. Besides, to fully come into my power here, I must seal the borders between our world and this one. Once the borders are closed, the Undarkened in your world will be weakened, cut off from me, their source. The Nephilim will be able to defeat them." He smiled, ice white and blinding. "It will be a miracle. A miracle performed for them by us. By me." "Ironic, don't you think, that I should be their saving angel?"
"What about everyone who's here? Jace, my mom, my friends?"
"They can all live. It makes no difference to me," Sebastian said. "They cannot harm me, not now, and doubly not when the borders are sealed."
"And all I have to do is ascend that throne," Clary said.
"And promise to stay beside me for as long as I live. Which, admittedly, will be a long time. When this world is sealed, I will not just be invulnerable. I will live forever. And behold, I am alive forevermore, and have the keys of hell and of death."
"You're willing to do this? Give up the whole world of Earth, your dark shadow hunters, your revenge?"
"It was beginning to bore me," said Sebastian. "This is more interesting. To be honest, you're beginning to bore me a bit too. Do decide whether you're going to get up on the throne or not, will you? Or do you need persuasion?"
Clary knew Sebastian's methods of persuasion. Knives under the fingernails, a hand to the throat. Part of her wished he would kill her, take this decision away from her. No one could help her. In this, she was utterly alone.
"I will not be the only one who lives forever," Sebastian said, and to her surprise, his voice was almost gentle. "Ever since you discovered the Shadow World, haven't you secretly wanted to be a hero? To be the most special of a special people? In our own way, we each wish to be the hero of our kind."
"Heroes save worlds," Clary said. "They don't destroy them."
"And I am offering you that chance," said Sebastian. "When you ascend that throne, you save the world. You save your friends. You have power unlimited. I am giving you a great gift because I love you. You can't embrace your own darkness, and yet always tell yourself that you did the right thing. How is that for getting everything you want?"
Clary closed her eyes for one heartbeat, and then another. Only enough time to see faces flash behind her eyelids. Jace, her mother, Luke, Simon, Isabel, Alec, and so many more. Maya and Raphael, and the Blackthorns, little Emma Carstairs, the fairies of the Seely Court, the faces of the Clave, even the ghostly memory of her father.
She opened her eyes and walked toward the throne. She heard Sebastian behind her draw a sharp breath. So, for all the surety in his voice, he had doubted, hadn't he? He had not been sure of her. Behind the thrones, the two windows flickered like video screens, one showing desolation, the other Alicante under attack. She caught glimpses of the inside of the Accords Hall as she reached the steps and walked up them. She moved steadily. She had made her decision. There was no faltering now. The throne was huge. It was like climbing up onto a platform. The gold of it was icy cold to her touch. She reached the last step, turned, and took her seat. She seemed to be looking down for miles from the top of a mountain peak. She saw the council hall spread out before her, Jace lying motionless by the wall, Sebastian looking up at her with a smile spreading over his face.
"Well done," he said. "My sister. My queen."
23. Judas Kiss. The doors of the hall exploded inward with a blast of splinters, shards of marble and wood flew like shattered bone. Emma stared numbly as red-clad warriors began to spill into the hall, followed by fairies in green and white and silver. And after them came the Nephilim, shadow hunters in black gear, desperate to protect their children. A wave of guards raced to meet the Undarkened at the door and were cut down. Emma watched them fall in what felt like slow motion. She knew she had risen to her feet and so had Julian, thrusting Tavi into Livia's arms. They both moved to block the younger Blackthorns, as hopeless as Emma knew the gesture was. "This is how it ends," she thought. They had run from Sebastian's warriors in Los Angeles, had fled to the Penhallows, and from the Penhallows to the Hall, and now they were trapped like rats and they would die here, and they might as well never have run at all. She reached for Cortana, thinking of her father, of what he would have said if she gave up. Carstairs didn't give up. They suffered and survived, or they died on their feet. At least if she died, she thought, she'd see her parents again. At least she'd have that. The Undarkens surged into the room, parting the desperately fighting shadow hunters like blades parting a field of wheat, driving toward the center of the hall. They seemed a murderous blur, but Emma's vision sharpened suddenly as one of them moved out of the crowd, directly towards the Blackthorns. It was Julian's father. His time as a servant of Sebastian had not been good to him. His skin looked dull and grey, his face welted with bloody cuts, but he was striding forward purposefully, his eyes on his children. Emma froze. Julian beside her had caught sight of his father. He seemed mesmerized as if by a snake. He had seen his father forced to drink from the infernal cup, Emma realized, but he hadn't seen him after, hadn't seen him raise a blade to his own son or laugh about the idea of his son's death or force Katerina to her knees to be tortured and turned. "Jules," she said. "Jules, that isn't your father." His eyes widened. "Emma, look out!" She whirled and screamed. A fairy warrior was looming above her, decked in silver armor. His hair was not hair at all, but a ropey tangle of thorned branches. Half his face was burned and bubbling where he must have been sprayed with iron powder or rock salt. One of his eyes was rolling, white and blinded, but the other fixed on Emma with murderous intent. Emma saw Diana Rayburn, her dark hair whirling as she spun toward them, her mouth open to cry a warning. Diana moved toward Emma and the fairy, but there was no way she was going to make it in time. The fairy raised its bronze sword with a savage snarl. Emma lunged forward, sinking Cortana into his chest. His blood was green like water. It sprayed out over her hand as she let go of her sword in shock. He fell like a tree, striking the marble floor of the hall with a heavy clang. She sprang forward, reaching for the hilt of Cortana, and heard Julian cry out, "Ty!" She whipped around. Amid the chaos of the hall, she could see the small space in which the Blackthorn stood. Andrew Blackthorn stopped in front of his children, an odd little smile on his face, and reached out a hand. And Ty of all of them, the least trusting, the least sentimental, was moving forward, his eyes fixed on his father, his own hand outstretched. "Dad?" he said. "Ty?" Livia reached for her twin, but her hand closed on air. "Ty, don't..."
"Don't listen to her,"
said Andrew Blackthorne, and if there had been any doubt that he was no longer the man who had been Julian's father, it was gone when Emma heard his voice. There was no kindness in it, only ice and the savage edge of a cruel glee. Come here, my boy, my Tiberius. Ty took another step forward, and Julian pulled the short sword from his belt and threw it. It sang through the air, straight and true, and Emma remembered, with a bizarre clarity, that last day in the Institute, and Katerina showing them how to throw a blade as direct and graceful as a line of poetry. How to throw a blade so that it never missed its mark. The blade whipped past Tiberius and sank into Andrew Blackthorne's chest. The man's eyes flew open in shock, his grey hand fumbling for the hilt protruding from his ribcage, and then he fell, crumpling to the ground. His blood smeared across the marble floor as Tiberius gave a cry, whirling to lash out at his brother, pounding his fists against Julian's chest. No, Ty panted. Why did you do that, Jules? I hate you, I hate you. Julian hardly seemed to feel it. He was staring at the place where his father had fallen. The other Endarkand were already moving forward, trampling the body of their fallen comrade. Diana Rayburn stood a distance away. She had begun to move toward the children and then stopped, her eyes full of sorrow. Hans came up and caught at the back of Tiberius's shirt, pulling him away from Julian. It was Livy, her face set. Ty! Her arms went around her twin, pinning his fist to his sides. Tiberius, stop it right now! Ty stopped and sagged against his sister. Slight as she was, she supported his weight. Ty, she said again softly. He had to, don't you understand? He had to. Julian stepped back. His face was white as paper. Stepped back and back until he hit one of the stone pillars and slid down it, crumpling, his shoulders shaking with silent gasps.
My sister. My queen. Clary sat rigid on the ivory and gold throne. She felt like a child in an adult's chair. The thing had been built for someone massive, and her feet dangled above the top step. Her hands gripped the arms of the throne, but her fingers didn't come close to reaching the carved handrests. Though, since each was shaped like a skull, she had no desire to touch them anyway. Sebastian was pacing inside his protective circle of runes. Every once in a while, he would pause to look up at her, and smiled the sort of uninhibited, gleeful smile she associated with the Sebastian from her vision, the boy with guiltless green eyes. He drew a long, sharp dagger from his belt as she watched, and ran the blade along the inside of his palm. His head fell back, his eyes half closing, as he stretched his hand out. Blood ran down his fingers and splattered onto the runes. Each began to glow with a dawning spark as the blood struck it. Clary pressed herself against the solid back of the throne. The runes were not Greybook runes. They were alien and strange. The door to the room opened, and Amatis strode in, followed by two moving lines of Endarkand warriors. Their faces were blank as they silently ranged themselves along the walls of the room, but Amatis looked worried. Her gaze skipped past Jace, motionless on the floor beside the body of the dead demon, to focus on her master.
Lord Sebastian, she said, your mother is not in her cell.
Sebastian frowned and tightened his bleeding hand into a fist. All around him the runes were burning fiercely now, with a cold ice-blue flame.
Vexing, he said. The others must have let her out.
Clary felt a surge of hope mixed with terror. She forced herself to remain silent, but saw Amatis's eyes flick toward her. She didn't seem surprised to see Clary on the throne. On the contrary, her lips curved into a smirk.
Would you like me to set the rest of the army to searching for them? She said to Sebastian. There's no need.
He glanced up toward Clary and smiled. There was a sudden explosive shattering sound, and the window behind her, the one that had looked out on Alicante, splintered into a spiderweb of mazed lines.
The borders are closing, Sebastian said. I will bring them to me.
The walls are closing in, Magnus said.
Alec tried to pull Magnus farther upright. The warlock slumped heavily against him, his head almost on Alec's shoulder. Alec had absolutely no idea where they were going. He had lost track of the twisting corridors what felt like ages ago, but he had no desire to communicate that to Magnus. Magnus seemed to be doing badly enough as it was, his breathing ragged and shallow, his heartbeat rapid. And now this.
Everything's fine, Alec soothed, his arm sliding around Magnus's waist. We just have to make it to...
Alec, Magnus said again, his voice surprisingly firm. I am not hallucinating. The walls are moving.
Alec stared and felt a flutter of panic. The corridor was heavy with dusty air. The walls seemed to shimmer and tremble. The floor warped as the walls began to slide toward each other, the corridor narrowing from one end like a trash compactor slamming closed. Magnus slipped and hit one of the buckling walls with a hiss of pain. Panicked, Alec seized his arm and pulled Magnus toward him.
Sebastian, Magnus gasped, as Alec began to drag him down the hall, away from the collapsing stone. He's doing this.
Alec managed an incredulous look. How would that even be possible? He doesn't control everything.
He could, if he sealed the borders between the dimensions.
Magnus took a rattling breath as he pushed himself into a run.
He could control this whole world.
Isabel shrieked as the ground opened up behind her. She threw herself forward just in time to avoid toppling into the chasm that was splitting the corridor apart.
Isabel!
Simon shouted, and reached to catch her by the shoulders. He forgot sometimes the strength that his vampire blood flooded through his body. He wrenched Isabel up with such force that they both toppled backward and Izzy landed on top of him. Under other circumstances he might have enjoyed it, but not with the stone keep shuddering itself apart around them. Isabel sprang to her feet, pulling him up after. They had lost Luke and Jocelyn back in one of the other corridors, as a wall had split apart, shedding mortarless rocks like scales. Everything since then had been a mad dash, dodging splintering wood and falling stones, and now chasms opening up in the ground. Simon was fighting despair. He couldn't help but feel that this was the end. The fortress would fall apart around them, and they would die and be buried here.
Don't!
Isabel said, breathless. Her dark hair was full of dust, her face bloody where a flying rock had cut her skin.
Don't what?
The ground heaved, and Simon half ducked, half fell forward into another corridor. He couldn't rid himself of the thought that somehow the fortress was hurting them. There seemed a purpose to its dissolution, as if it were directing them somehow.
Don't give up!
She gasped, flinging herself against a set of doors as the corridor behind them began to crumble. The doors swung open and she and Simon tumbled into the next room. Isabel sucked in a gasp, quickly cut off as the doors slammed behind them, shutting away the explosive noise of the keep. For a moment, Simon simply thanked God that the ground under his feet was steady and the walls weren't moving. Then he registered where he was, and his relief vanished. They were in an enormous room, semicircular in shape, with a raised platform at the curved end, half cast in shadow. The walls were lined with darkened warriors in red gear, like a row of scarlet teeth. The room stank like pitch and fire, sulfur and the unmistakable taint of demon blood. The body of a bloated demon lay sprawled against one wall, and near it was another body. Simon felt his mouth go dry. Jace. Within a circle of glowing runes etched on the floor stood Sebastian. He grinned as Isabel gave a cry, ran to Jace, and dropped down by his side. She put her fingers to his throat. Simon saw her shoulders relax.
He's alive, Sebastian said, sounding bored. Queen's orders.
Isabel looked up. Some of the strands of her dark hair were stuck to her face with blood. She looked fierce and beautiful.
The Sealy Queen?
When has she ever cared about Jace?
Sebastian laughed. He seemed to be in an enormously good mood.
Not the Sealy Queen, he said. The Queen of this realm. You may know her.
With a flourish, he gestured toward the platform at the far end of the room, and Simon felt his unbeating heart contract.
He had barely glanced at the dais when he had come into the room. He saw now that on it were two thrones, of ivory bone and melted gold, and on the right-hand throne sat Clary. Her red hair was incredibly vivid against the white and gold, like a banner of fire. Her face was pale and still, expressionless. Simon took an involuntary step forward, and was immediately blocked by a dozen darkened warriors, Amatis at their center. She carried a massive spear and wore an expression of frightening venom.
"Stop where you are, vampire," she said. "You will not approach the lady of this realm."
Simon staggered back. He could see Isabel staring incredulously from Clary to Sebastian to him. "Clary," he called. She didn't flinch or move, but Sebastian's face darkened like a thunderstorm.
"You will not say my sister's name," he hissed. "You thought she belonged to you. She belongs to me now, and I will not share."
"You're insane," Simon said.
"And you're dead," Sebastian said. "Does any of it matter now?"
His eyes raked up and down Simon.
"Dear sister," he said, pitching his voice loudly enough for the whole room to hear it. "Are you absolutely sure you want to keep this one intact?"
Before she could answer, the entryway to the room burst open and Magnus and Alec spilled in, followed by Luke and Jocelyn. The door slammed behind them, and Sebastian clapped his hands together. One hand was bloody, and a drop of blood fell at his feet and sizzled where it hit the glowing runes, like water sizzling on a hot skillet.
"Now everyone's here," he declared, his voice delighted. "It's a party."
In Clary's life, she had seen many things that were wonderful and beautiful, and many things that were terrible. But none were as terrible as the look on her mother's face as Jocelyn stared at her daughter, seated on the throne beside Sebastian's.
"Mom," Clary breathed, so softly that no one could hear her. They were all staring at her. Magnus and Alec, Luke and her mother, Simon and Isabel, who had moved to hold Jace in her lap, her dark hair falling down over him like the fringe of a shawl.
It was every bit as bad as Clary had imagined it would be. Worse. She'd expected shock and horror. She hadn't thought of hurt and betrayal. Her mother staggered back. Luke's arms went around her to hold her up, but his gaze was on Clary, and he looked as if he were staring at a stranger.
"Welcome, citizens of Edom," said Sebastian,
his lips curling up like a bow being drawn.
"Welcome to your new world."
And he stepped free of the burning circle that held him. Luke's hand went to his belt. Isabel began to rise, but it was Alec who moved fastest, one hand to his bow and the other to the quiver at his back. The arrow knocked and flying before Clary could shape the cry for him to stop. The arrow flew straight toward Sebastian and buried itself in his chest. He staggered back from the force of it, and Clary heard a gasp ripple down the line of dark shadow hunters. A moment later, Sebastian regained his balance and, with a look of annoyance, pulled the arrow from his chest. It was stained with blood.
"Fool," he said. "You can't hurt me. Nothing under heaven can."
He flung the arrow at Alec's feet.
"Did you think you were an exception?"
Alec's eyes flicked toward Jace. It was minute, but Sebastian caught the glance and grinned.
"Ah, yes," he said. "Your hero with the heavenly fire. But it's gone, isn't it? Spent on rage in the desert at a demon of my sending."
He snapped his fingers, and a spark of blue ice shot from them, rising like a mist. For a moment, Clary's view of Jace and Isabel was obscured. A moment later, she heard a cough and a gasp, and Isabel's arms were sliding away from Jace as he sat up, then rose to his feet. Behind Clary, the window was still splintering, slowly. She could hear the grind of the glass. Through the now crazed glass spilled a lace-like quilting of light and shadow.
"Welcome back, brother," said Sebastian, equably,
as Jace stared around him with a face that was rapidly draining of color as he took in the room full of warriors. His friends, standing horrified around him, and lastly, Clary, on her throne.
"Would you like to try to kill me? You have plenty of weapons there. If you feel like you'd like to try slaying me with the heavenly fire, now is your chance."
He opened his arms wide.
"I won't fight back."
Jay stood facing Sebastian. They were the same height, almost the same build, though Sebastian was thinner, more wiry. Jace was filthy and blood-stained, his gear torn, his hair tangled. Sebastian was elegant in red. Even his bloody hand seemed intentional. Sebastian's wrists were bare. Around Jace's left wrist, a silver circlet gleamed.
"You're wearing my bracelet," Sebastian observed. "If I cannot reach heaven, I will raise hell."
"Apt, don't you think?"
"Jace!" Isabel hissed. "Jace, do it! Stab him, go on!"
But Jace was shaking his head. His hand had been at his weapons belt. Slowly, he lowered it to his side. Isabel gave a cry of despair. The look on Alec's face was just as bleak, though he stayed silent. Sebastian lowered his arms to his sides and held out his hand.
"I believe that it's time you returned my bracelet, brother. Time you rendered unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Give me back my possessions, including my sister. Do you renounce her to my keeping?"
"No."
It wasn't Jace, it was Jocelyn. She pulled away from Luke and launched herself forward, hands reaching out for Sebastian.
"You hate me, so kill me! Torture me, do what you want to me, but leave Clary alone!"
Sebastian rolled his eyes.
"I am torturing you."
"She's just a girl," Jocelyn panted. "My child, my daughter."
Sebastian's hand shot out and gripped Jocelyn's jaw, half lifting her off the floor.
"I was your child," he said. "Lilith gave me a realm. You gave me your curse. You are no kind of mother, and you will stay away from my sister. You are alive on her sufferance. You all are. Do you understand?"
He let go of Jocelyn. She staggered back, the bloody print of his hand marked on her face. Luke caught her.
"You are all alive because Clarissa wants you alive. There is no other reason."
"You told her you wouldn't kill us if she ascended that throne,"
Jace said, unclasping the silver bracelet from around his wrist. His voice was without inflection. He hadn't met Clary's eyes.
"Didn't you?"
"Not exactly," said Sebastian. "I offered her something much more substantial than that."
"The world," Magnus said. He appeared to be upright through sheer force of will. His voice sounded like gravel tearing his throat.
"You're sealing the borders between our world and this one, aren't you? That's what this rune circle is for, not just protection. So you could work your spell. That's what you've been doing. If you close the gateway, you are no longer splitting your powers between two worlds. All your force will be concentrated here. With all your power concentrated in this dimension, you will be well nigh invincible here."
"If he seals the borders, how will he get back to our world?" Isabel demanded.
She had risen to her feet. Her whip gleamed on her wrist, but she made no move to use it.
"He won't," said Magnus. "None of us will. The gates between the worlds will close forever, and we will be trapped here."
"Trapped,"
Sebastian mused. "Such an ugly word. You'll be guests." He grinned. "Trapped guests."
"That's what you offered her," Magnus said, raising his eyes to Clary. "You told her if she would agree to rule beside you here, you would close the borders and leave our world in peace. Rule in Edom, save the world. Right?"
"You're very perceptive," Sebastian said after a brief pause. "It's annoying."
"Clary, no!"
Jocelyn cried. Luke tugged her back, but she was paying attention to nothing but her daughter.
"Don't do this!"
"I have to," Clary said, speaking for the first time. Her voice caught and carried, incredibly loud in the stone room. Suddenly everyone was looking at her. Everyone but Jace. He was staring down at the bracelet held between his fingers. She straightened.
I have to, don't you understand? If I don't, he'll kill everyone in our world. Destroy everything. Millions, billions of people. He'll turn our world to this.
She gestured toward the window that looked out onto the burned plains of Edom.
It's worth it, it has to be. I'll learn to love him. He won't hurt me. I believe it.
You think you can change him? Temper him, make him better? Because you're the only thing he cares about,
Jocelyn said.
I know Morgenstern men. It doesn't work. You'll regret...
You never held the life of a whole world in your hand, Mom,
said Clary, with infinite tenderness and infinite sorrow.
There's only so much advice you can give me.
She looked at Sebastian.
I choose what he chooses. The gift he gave me. I accept it.
She saw Jace swallow. He dropped the bracelet into Sebastian's open palm.
Clary is yours, he said, and stepped back.
Sebastian snapped his fingers.
You heard her, he said. All of you. Kneel to your queen.
No, Clary thought, but she forced herself into stillness, silence. She watched as the Andarkand began to kneel, one by one, their heads bowed. The last to kneel was Amatis, and she did not bow her head. Luke was staring at his sister, his face flayed open. It was the first time he had seen her like this, Clary realized, though he had been told of it. Amatis turned and looked over her shoulder at the Shadow Hunters. Her gaze caught on her brother's for just a moment, her lip curled. It was a vicious look.
Do it! She said, kneel, or I will kill you.
Magnus knelt first. Clary would never have guessed that. Magnus was so proud, but then it was a pride that transcended the emptiness of gestures. She doubted it would shame him to kneel when it meant nothing to him. He went down on his knees, gracefully, and Alec followed him down. Then Isabel, then Simon, then Luke, drawing Clary's mother down beside him. And lastly Jace, his blonde head bowed, went to his knees, and Clary heard the window behind her shatter into pieces. It sounded like her breaking heart. Glass rained down. Behind it was bare stone. There was no longer any window that led to Alicante.
It is done. The paths between the worlds are closed.
Sebastian wasn't smiling, but he looked incandescent. As if he were blazing. The circle of runes on the floor was shimmering with blue fire. He ran toward the platform, took the steps two at a time, and reached up to catch Clary's hands. She let him draw her down from the throne, until she stood in front of him. He was still holding her. His hands felt like bracelets of fire around her wrists.
You accept it, he said. You accept your choice.
I accept it. She said, forcing herself to look at him with absolute directness.
I do. Then kiss me, he said. Kiss me like you love me.
Her stomach tightened. She had been expecting this, but it was like expecting a blow to the face. Nothing could prepare you. Her face searched his. In some other world, some other time, some other brother was smiling across the grass at her. Eyes as green as springtime. She tried to smile.
In front of everyone, I don't think... We have to show them, he said.
And his face was as immovable as an angel pronouncing a sentencing.
That we are unified. Prove yourself, Clarissa.
She leaned toward him. He shivered.
Please, she said. Put your arms around me.
She caught a flash of something in his eyes, vulnerability, surprise at being asked, before his arms came up around her. He drew her close. She laid one hand on his shoulder. Her other hand slid to her waist where Heosphoros rested with its scabbard tucked into the belt of her gear. Her fingers curled around the back of his neck. His eyes were wide, She could see his heartbeat pulsing in his throat.
"Now, Clary," he said. And she leaned up, touching her lips to his face. She felt him shudder against her as she whispered, her lips moving against his cheek. "Hail, Master," she said, and saw his eyes widen just as she pulled Helios Phoros free and brought it up in a bright arc, the blade slamming through his ribcage, the tip positioned to pierce his heart. Sebastian gasped and spasmed in her arms. He staggered back, the hilt of the blade protruding from his chest. His eyes were wide, and for a moment she saw the shock of betrayal in them. Shock and pain. And it actually hurt. It hurt somewhere deep down in a place she thought she had buried long ago, a place that mourned the brother he might have been.
"Clary!" he gasped, starting to straighten, and now the look of betrayal in his eyes was fading, and she saw the beginning spark of rage.
It hadn't worked, she thought in terror. It hadn't worked. And even if the borders between the worlds were sealed now, he would take it out on her. On her friends, her family. On Jace.
"You know better," he said,
reaching down to grasp the hilt of the sword in his hand.
"I can't be hurt. Not by any weapon under heaven."
He gasped and broke off. His hands had closed around the hilt, just above the wound in his chest. There was no blood, but there was a flash of red, a spark. Fire. The wound was beginning to burn.
"What is this?"
he demanded through clenched teeth.
"And I will give him the Morning Star," Clary said. "It's not a weapon that was made under heaven. It is heaven's fire."
With a scream, he pulled the sword free. He gave the hilt with its hammered pattern of stars one incredulous look before he blazed up like a seraph blade. Clary staggered back, tripped over the edge of the steps to the throne, and threw one arm partly over her face. He was burning, burning like the pillar of fire that went before the Israelites. She could still see Sebastian within the flames, but they were around him, consuming him in their white light, turning him to an outline of dark char within a flame so bright it seared her eyes. Clary looked away, burying her face in her arm. Her mind raced back through that night when she had come to Jace through the flames, and kissed him, and told him to trust her. And he had, even when she had knelt down in front of him and driven the point of Helios Phoros into the ground. All around it she had drawn the same rune over and over with her steely. The rune she had once seen, it felt like so long ago now, on a rooftop in Manhattan. The winged hilt of an angel's sword. A gift from Athuriel, she guessed, who had given her so many gifts. The image had rested in her mind until she'd needed it. The rune for shaping heaven's fire. That night on the demon plane, the blaze all around them had evaporated, drawn into the blade of Helios Phoros, until the metal had burned and glowed and sung when she'd touched it, the sound of angelic choruses. The fire had left behind only a wide circle of sand, fused into glass, a substance that had glowed like the surface of the lake she had so often dreamed about, the frozen lake where Jace and Sebastian had battled to the death in her nightmares.
"This weapon could kill Sebastian," she had said.
Jace had been more dubious, careful. He had tried to take it from her, but the light had died in it when he'd touched it. It reacted only to her, the one who had created it. She had agreed that they had to be cautious, in case it didn't work. It seemed the height of hubris to imagine she had trapped holy fire in a weapon, the way that fire had been trapped in the Blade of Glorious.
"But the angel gave you this gift to create," Jace had said. "And do we not have his blood in our veins?"
Whatever the blade had sung with, it was now gone. Gone into her brother. Clary could hear Sebastian screaming, and over that, the cries of the Indarkened. A burning wind blew past her, carrying with it the tang of ancient deserts, of a place where miracles were common, and the divine was manifest in fire. The noise stopped as suddenly as it had started. The dais shook under Clary as a weight collapsed onto it, She looked up and saw that the fire was gone, though the ground was scarred, and both thrones looked blackened, the gold on them no longer bright, but charred and burned and melted. Sebastian lay a few feet from her, on his back. There was a great blackened hole across the front of his chest. He turned his head toward her, his face taut and white with pain, and her heart contracted. His eyes were green. The strength in her legs gave out. She collapsed onto the dais on her knees. "You," he whispered, and she stared at him in horrified fascination, unable to look away from what she had wrought. His face was utterly without color, like paper stretched over bone. She didn't dare to look down at his chest, where his jacket had fallen away. She could see the stain of blackness across his shirt, like a spill of acid.
"You put the heavenly fire into the blade of the sword," he said. "It was cleverly done."
"It was a rune, that's all," she said, kneeling over him, her eyes searching his. He looked different, not just his eyes, but the whole shape of his face. His jawline softer, his mouth without its cruel twist.
"Sebastian, no, I'm not him. I'm Jonathan," he whispered. "I'm Jonathan."
"Go to Sebastian!" It was Amatis, rising, with all the Undarkened behind her. There was grief on her face and rage.
"Kill the girl!"
Jonathan struggled to sit upright.
"No!"
he shouted hoarsely.
"Get back!"
The dark shadow hunters, who had begun to surge forward, froze in confusion. Then pushing between them came Jocelyn. She shoved by Amatis without a look and dashed up the steps to the dais. She moved toward Sebastian, Jonathan, and then froze, standing over him, staring down with a look of amazement, mixed with a terrible horror.
"Mother,"
Jonathan said. He was staring, almost as if he couldn't quite focus his eyes on her. He began to cough. Blood ran from his mouth. His breath rattled in his lungs.
"I dream sometimes of a boy with green eyes. A boy who is never poisoned with demon blood. A boy who could laugh and love and be human. And that is the boy I wept over. But that boy never existed."
Jocelyn's face hardened, as if she were steeling herself to do something. She knelt down by Jonathan's head and drew him up into her lap. Clary stared. She didn't think she could have done it, could have brought herself to touch him like that. But then her mother had always blamed herself for Jonathan's existence. There was something in her determined expression that said that she had seen him into this world, and she would see him out. The moment he was propped up, Jonathan's breathing eased. There was bloody foam on his lips.